Ryan Noonan is playing on the radio, baby.
I'm better looking, I have better hair, I'm deceivingly smart, and I want everyone else to do what I say.
Well, it's the big show. Yes, it's a big, bad show tonight.
Good afternoon. Welcome. Glad you're with me. Brian Noonan in for Ro Khan and Anna DeVellantes on 720 WGN here until 7 o'clock when Blackhawks hockey takes over. It is a big show, jam-packed. Always more fun, though, when you are involved. 312-981-7200. That's the phone. That's the text. That's how you get involved. If you do call that number, you'll be talking to Ben Anderson, executive producing the big broadcast today. As always, if you're nice to him, you get to me. That's how it works. Social media, Brian Noonan Show on Facebook and Twitter. You can keep in contact with the show that way as well. We'll talk to Ryan Burrow in just a few minutes. Some troubling statistics from the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund came out today. Ryan will tell us all about that. We'll talk to Tom Skilling after the bottom of the hour, find out how things are looking, not only for today, awful day weather-wise. My pants are still wet, and that is not because I have some sort of control issues. It's because I made the mistake, as I'm sure many of you did, of walking outside today. And as I came between the Aon Center and the building next to it, it was as if I was walking into a fireman's hose. I was drenched completely. I know that's happened to everybody today. If you tried to put up an umbrella, good luck. So we'll talk to Tom about that. The Women's March Chicago Board President Jackie Algie will join us. There's been a lot of misinformation coming out about the Women's March, whether there was one scheduled for January or not. We'll talk right to the source and get the information there. Des Bishop is a superstar comedian in Ireland. He's from New York, and he is coming to Chicago. We'll meet Des and talk to him. We will talk, as Kim mentioned in her news, there is a new museum in Whiting, Indiana, the National Mascot Hall of Fame. We'll talk to its executive director, and Steve Dale will be here after 6, and we'll throw some other things in there. I got to talk to Carm after 5. We got to do a little prognosticating about the Bears. We have to talk about Derrick Rose, a lot of sports issues. We also have to see if Carmen has survived after doing sports yesterday. A show. What'd you do this morning? Did you run a marathon? What's been on the agenda? Because I'm guessing you didn't just start working now.
I had a great swim this morning, Brian.
Of course.
Really got a good side stroke going on, a nice elementary back.
Working on those obliques, are you?
Getting after the obliques. Little,
sure.
Little core work.
Of course.
Did a nice icing afterwards, followed by a heat, dealing with a
wow.
Big toe issue here, Brian.
Big toe issue.
Yeah.
And you got turf toe, Carm? What happened to you?
I either have turf toe, arthritis, or gout. One of the three.
Wow. Gout's the rich man's disease. I can see why you might have that.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I'm looking for over here to start the new year.
The rich man's disease.
Right. So.
Wow. So it's turf toe, gout, or arthritis.
Yeah, most likely arthritis, and I'm completely terrified about it. If you've got a good foot doctor, please text in 312-981-7200.
Actually, going to the podiatrist tomorrow morning.
Are you really?
Of course I am.
Can I come?
No, honestly, sure, you can come with me. Come on out. The appointment's at 11:15. You're welcome to join me. We'll tag team them, see what's up.
All right. I mean...
So Carm's got the big toe issue.
Sounds like as good of an option, by the way, as any that I've got.
I was going to say, are you getting better offers?
Yeah, not really, no.
I've got a guy who's... I'm walking, aren't I?
You have a great cadence.
I have a nice gait. So don't poo-poo my offer yet, Carm. I'm here till 7. You can change your mind. We'll see what's going on.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. All right, so we're gonna take a quick break. Then we will talk to Ryan Burrow. We'll find out what's going on with these troubling statistics, and to get to more of it all after this. It's Brian Noonan in for Rowan Anna, 720 WGN. Brian Noonan in for Rowan Anna, 720 WGN. Carm, you'll have to take a look at the text screen. We're getting a lot of podiatrist and orthopedic recommendations. You'll have to do your own search and figure that out, since you obviously don't want to carpool with me tomorrow. That's fine. I don't take it personally.
I'd like to say thank you to everybody.
You might get a 2-for-1 if you guys go together.
Group discount.
I like how everyone's got a foot guy.
You gotta have a foot guy. See, you're still young enough. Well, Carm is young. Carm's just lived a hard life. But
it's been hard on his feet.
Yeah.
620, remind Carm that amputation is always an option. Now, that's just not very nice.
That's just me and Jerry in Kansas. Yeah. We don't, you know, it's the holidays.
And what kind of attitude is
that? Let the doctor tell that to Carmen. Don't, you know, we don't have to remind him of that. He's living with that fear constantly. Somebody else blamed your poor nutrition, Carm.
Well, I mean, got to call it what it is, right?
I don't know. I would let the doctor call it what it is. That's what they're for.
One too many milkshakes, Brian.
Really? Because I'm not going to... Listen, I love the listeners. I have a love-hate relationship with the text screen, but I'm not going to take medical advice from anonymous texters. I'm going to go to somebody in a lab coat.
See, I'm the type of guy that loves a good medical advice at 312-981-7821.
Right?
I'll listen to anyone.
Sure, well, you can listen to anyone, but then if you follow through with them, that's where you face your peril.
Somebody told me, if somebody says, like, dip it in vinegar, I'll probably go home and do it.
I did a little warm water and Epsom salt. My
See, God. There you go.
But we can't worry about that right now, because this is a very sad day with statistics coming out of the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund. Ryan Burrow from here at WGN and ABC News correspondent joins me now in the studio. Thank you for taking some time. This is not good news.
No. You know what this is a culmination of all these stories we've been hearing all year round, right? A traffic stop in Ohio and an officer's fatally shot. A traffic accident in California and an officer has died. We've obviously had our fair share of these stories in Chicago this year. 4 police deaths. We haven't had that. CPD hasn't seen that since 2010.
That's amazing.
Where 4 officers died. 2 of them by suspects. 2 of them killed by the train crash that we heard about just a couple weeks ago. Right now, actually, the president just tweeting out there's a full-scale manhunt going on in California for an illegal immigrant accused of shooting and killing a police officer during a traffic stop. Of course, he, you know, takes it to the next level and talks about getting tough on border security and building the wall. That being said, this is another statistic that gets added here. 144 federal, state, local, tribal, and territorial officers dying in the line of duty. That is up 12% from last year. And when you read inside of the numbers, first of all, 144 is not a record. It is up from last year. Last year we were at 129, but we're kind of doing a up and down motion. We're kind of hanging between that 125 and 150 mark over the last few years. What's unique about this year's numbers is 52 officers died as a result of firearms. That's up 13% from last year, whereas 50 officers died as a result of traffic-related deaths. Usually, it's the traffic-related deaths that lead the firearms deaths. So that's kind of where we're seeing a little bit of the difference in the uniqueness this year compared to previous years.
And so traffic-related deaths would be anything from, that would probably include the 2 officers who died from the train.
Actually, it does not. That actually gets lumped in with the 42 officers who died from other causes. This is heart attacks, strokes, 4 officers drown, and then the 2 officers who were hit by the train. So a little bit different of a grouping. Obviously, no loss as far as the hero level in any of these cases, but you know, it does just kind of group them into a different category.
Well, they do break it down, and we've also had in Chicago, unfortunately, a couple of officers who've taken their own lives. Where does that fall, or do they not bring those numbers in to these kind of statistics?
These numbers are not brought into these statistics. These are specifically for on-duty officers. Okay. That being said, I talked with the CEO of the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial, and he says this is a growing problem. We talked about this a little bit, where, as you know, these officers, 144, you know, we think about their families, we think about their loved ones who are dealing with this loss, but you got coworkers who died. You know, you've got guys on the force, you've got partners who have died in this process. What happens, you know, to these partners who now have to move forward? And we talked a little bit about, you know, the mental health aspect, the therapy and the counseling that's needed. And he told me it's getting better. It's not there yet, but it's getting better as far as offering services. Because, I mean, we look at the situation with the 2 officers who were hit by the train. I mean, who was responding? I mean, it was their coworkers who were responding to this situation, who had to, you know,
come upon that scene. Yeah,
and it's not just their own officers, but they're coming up on horrific scenes as well. So,
sure.
Yeah, obviously that is, you know, suicides, PTSD kind of situations. Those are things that moving forward.
And while they're working on it to make it more available to the officers, are they trying to take that stigma away as well? Because you know as well as I do, for years and years, it was frowned upon. Wrongly, but it was frowned upon for officers to seek that sort of mental health or counseling because then, for whatever reason, you were viewed as maybe not as strong.
These are tough guy and women on
yes.
the force. And, you know, it's hard to, you know, see these things and not have it impact you. But on the other hand, you need to put that face forward. You're strong and stable. And,
right.
you know, I talked to a therapist in the area who said that, you know, there was a suburban officer who was killed a few years ago. And he offered up his partner services and he didn't want it.
Yeah.
Didn't want it. Didn't want to do it. Didn't feel like he needed to. You know, I mean, that might be something a few years down the road or months down the road he realizes he might need.
Sure.
But, you know, everyone's going through that. And it's not just officers dying. It's a lot of other things that they see in a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, we can't imagine the horrors that, unfortunately, these officers have to come upon. And it's all over the country. So these are not just Illinois statistics, but the Illinois statistics are still shocking. And the rise in the percentages is shocking. Now, obviously, firearm fatalities... There, you can debate guns all day and night. What are police departments or the people you talk to? How do they try to minimize the traffic and the other ways? You know, if a guy has a heart attack or a woman has, you know, something like that, obviously that can't really be prevented, but.
Or
there
can it?
Training.
I mean, are there things that are causing stress that maybe can
sure.
be prevented? No, that's the next step. So these law enforcement agencies and these groups across the country will look at these numbers and say, okay, what is it about these cases? Do we not have enough bulletproof vests? You know, is there something about the shifts that
the
are putting more strain?
Exactly.
You know, what's interesting about these 52 officers who died from firearms is a lot of them died as a result of answering calls of domestic disturbances
right.
and domestic incidents. I mean, it's not necessarily that these officers were being targeted or ambushed
right.
in any way. They were just pulling up to a scene and, you know, bullets may have been flying or maybe somehow they got pulled into this scene in one form or another that led to the shooting.
Well, everybody in law enforcement will tell you domestic disturbances are the most dicey
sure.
environment to walk into because somebody who you think you're going to help can turn on you in an instant
Absolutely.
Because suddenly you're taking their spouse or their loved one into custody. It's really, really tough.
Five of the incidents of these 52 were ambushed officers,
okay.
officers who were set up to be in a situation where they just wanted to kill someone who was wearing blue.
Right.
And so obviously those are situations that, you know, terrify everyone.
Yes.
You know, we saw just a couple of years ago in Dallas with the situation mm-hmm. that happened in the downtown area there that officers were targeted. But five in this case, two others shot by friendly fire. So that's something, too, that I'm sure they'll take a look at.
Sure.
Find out, you know, there are ways that we can improve strategies we can use to improve those kind of situations.
It's training, it's mental health help, it's all of that combined because these men and women are doing jobs that most of us would never want to do in a million years.
Sure.
And so it's to see, again, firearm-related fatalities up 13%, total fatalities up 12% over the same time last year. You know, hopefully next year we can see a decrease, but right now, not so much. Any parting thoughts from them?
You know, just as looking at Chicago, all four of the officers who died here, those were the four who died in Illinois.
Yeah.
Outside of those four, we didn't lose anyone, thankfully. Indiana had five. Wisconsin had two officers who died this year. So there were 14 states that had zero, but when you look at California, Texas, Florida, New York, they all lost 11.
Yeah, double digits. That's, you know, and... Granted, you got New York more people than
sure.
than here, but still, that's not good. Not good. But it's always good to talk to you, and I always
appreciate you
taking the time to stay on top of this stuff and jump in. Now, you had a question. Carm, I'm going to let Ryan, we got about a minute. Ryan had a question. I'm going to let him posit it to you as well about Sunday.
You go at the Vikings hard, right?
Absolutely. This is no time to take your foot off the gas. Absolutely,
because like I was saying, is if you
foot on the throat,
you saw. Let's say you see the Rams winning, and you decide we're going to pull our players, and you end up losing to the Vikings. Now you're going into the playoff, potentially playing the Vikings, and you just came off a loss to them. That doesn't make you feel good.
You leave them in. You leave them in until you see that the Rams, there's no chance the Rams are going to lose, right? Yeah. And then maybe fourth quarter, you sit some of your guys.
Yeah, and I also think you feel good if by knocking them out. You're out of the playoffs.
Yes.
See you
yes.
later.
Adios.
And then let's go Minnesota, and rather let's go Philadelphia. Bring it on.
Yeah. We'll go through because there is like a mafia style flow chart of the different things that could happen on Sunday, who the Bears will play, whether it's going to be the Eagles, the Seahawks, the Vikings. I don't know how you keep it straight. Karm does. So we'll do that.
I got it all right here, Brian.
You got it all up in the noggin?
Yeah, absolutely.
Thankfully you're not carrying it in your toe, because that would be maybe that's a problem. Maybe you got too much information. It's filtering down to the toe. The toe can't contain it.
I got a guy.
Ryan's got a guy. The texters all have a guy. Everybody's got a guy. Maybe just take a hammer, hit it. See if that, if that helps it. Impact maintenance.
I'm calling like three of the doctors so far that have been listed here.
And you'll get into none of them.
Right.
Ryan, thanks again. All we will
right,
talk to
care.
You very soon.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
I don't know. I think I would have preferred snow today than what I walked through earlier. It is nuts outside. There's only one guy to blame when the weather turns frightful. whether he deserves it or not, and I'm going to go with he does not. But Tom, what's going on today? This is insane.
This weather is more schizophrenic than the stock market.
I'll tell you, it's up and down and crazy.
Oh my word! You know, but the interesting thing is these winds are howling. There have been downstate wind gusts to 62 miles an hour in some locations down toward Champaign. So it's going to be windy, and what's interesting, Brian, is we're reversing the normal trend. Instead of cooling off at night, the temperatures probably have another 4 or 5 hours to go of rising, so the high will actually occur between 10 and midnight, and then it begins to tail off after that. And we're down now from steady rain that produced almost 2/3 of an inch in the city to showers, and might pop an isolated thunderstorm on a cold front. That's highly problematic, but the bottom line is, tomorrow will be a day of falling temps. Might sprinkle in the morning, and we'll have snow showers in the afternoon. So you're right. I mean, how's that for bouncing all over the place?
Today, it was, except that it was colder, obviously. This was like some midsummer storm, because the winds, as you mentioned, the winds were howling. The rain was coming down in sheets. It was insane.
Oh, it absolutely was. And, you know, they're shoveling up more than a foot of snow out in Minnesota. They've had a near blizzard in some areas out there. But that same storm put us in its warm sector, and you know the way you get this warm, the way the temperature will peak around probably 54 or 55 later tonight, which would make it the warmest temperature of the month. That's interesting. But the way you get warm like that is you develop a strong wind that literally pumps the air from a region that tends to warm up more than we do this time of the year up here before it can cool off. And that's exactly what we're doing tonight.
So we're getting that air. Tomorrow we've got some snow coming. This is
snow showers.
Or snow showers,
yes.
Yeah, nothing big.
Kind of backwash stuff. I suppose it could be enough into tomorrow night to dust some surfaces. This doesn't look like a big deal. What's interesting is you look out into the future, we get these quick hits of colder air. So, like Saturday, will only be 35. Then we'll be up to 40 and 41 Sunday, Monday. Then a really respectable chunk of cold air, but only for a couple of days. Tuesday, the temperatures will fall. 31 down to 20s during the day, and only 22 on Wednesday. And then we bounce right back in Pacific air into the 30s on Thursday, and probably the 40s by later next week. So everything is moving right along. It's a very progressive pattern, as we say in the weather business.
Is this so unusual, the fluctuations in temperature? Because I know it drives you crazy when people deny that nothing is happening with the climate. Because that's just fake science.
Hey,
it
you know what?
It seems so weird for us to be at 50 one day and then 30, and then we jump up and down again, and then it's pouring rain and it's snowing. Something's going on.
Oh, yeah. It's crazy. Do you know in Australia, they have record-breaking heat going on right now. They're expecting temperatures up around 116 to 117 degrees.
Whoa.
Never been that hot. at this time of the year. And, of course, it is their summer now down in the southern hemisphere. But that breaks records even for them. So, you know, there are strange things going on. And look at this. We've had $11 billion weather disasters from hurricanes that have been supercharged by warmer ocean temperatures. They've produced both stronger winds and also much more rain than they normally do. On the other hand, it looks like the bill for fighting all those wildfires will be about $18 billion, and last year's tab was three times the previous highest. This year will eclipse that. So, you know, you start adding all this up, and this is all, you know, put on the tab of the U.S. taxpayer or our descendants to whom we leave the debt. And so, you know, there's strange things going on.
And we look at those fires, and if people, you've seen them up close, Tom, and I've unfortunately seen them up close. Yeah. It's something you can't believe, and it's drought. It's winds. It's it's all of these
forest management superimposed on that, but it is not the only factor. Forest management is but one. This is they've had an unusual warmth and unusual dryness, and this is becoming more and more the pattern. They think this drought that's underway in the Southwest is one of these mega droughts, as they call it, and we haven't seen anything like that for 500 years in that region, and of course that area, you know, they dam up the Colorado River behind the Hoover Dam and use the water for Las Vegas and Phoenix and partly for Los Angeles. And the snowpacks in winters have been going down.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an invaluable source of water for folks out there. And with these decreasing winter snowpacks out there, that's an issue.
So what takes it from a normal drought to a mega drought?
Well, I think the persistence of the thing.
Okay.
You know, it just goes on and on and on. And by the way, you know, this is one of the things. The warming Arctic may be to blame for this, and here's how. The warm air domes that develop in the northern latitudes, Alaska, for instance, has been unusually warm. If you look at a plot of temperatures averaged across the state, they've had more above-normal temperatures, almost two times the above-normal temperatures than the below-normal temperatures. But the warming up there causes the jet stream to buckle. And so that has implications down here in the mid-latitudes because it slows down the progression of extreme weather events. So if you're dry, you tend to stay dry longer. If you're hot, you tend to stay hot longer. If you're cold, you tend to stay cold longer. And so, you know, just all kinds of ramifications. And then, you know, the oceans, which are absorbing a lot of this carbon dioxide, they're 30% more acidic than they were at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. That's just a whole nother matter that normally isn't even discussed. And there are dead zones in the ocean that are increasing in aerial coverage and scope in which there's just no oxygen.
But nothing is changing, Tom. The climate's fine. I don't know why you persist in this. Fallacy that something is wrong with the
you want to scream sometimes.
Everybody knows of your love for Alaska. Have you noticed over the years that you've been going there, have you noticed changes that are strictly due to changes?
No question about it. I was looking at they've changed Barrow, the city that was once known as Barrow, back to its native name. But that's the most northerly city. And that's an area where, you know, ice, you know, banked up against the coastline and blocked a lot of the erosion that occurs with storms. That ice is not showing up with the frequency or the duration it used to. So what's happening is these little native villages up there are being eroded to the point they collapse into the ocean. And there's also all kinds of habitat changes going on. Every glacier in Alaska is in recession. They've melted something on the order of trillions of tons of ice up there since 1994. Greenland's lost 9 trillion tons of ice, and we can measure that now. And Antarctica is, a lot of the ice sheet there is unstable in the west end of the continent. So, and this all contributes to sea level rise, which will be a factor, you know, not so much for us, but for folks along the coastline there.
Well, I got a text from our listener, Jerry, in Toronto, Kansas. He says it was 53 degrees at noon. Now it's 36.
Isn't that something?
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's what these storms do.
It's crazy.
They're the product of a juxtaposition of cold and warm air. So, you know, in places like Kansas, where you're near the storm track, you get a taste of both.
So, Tom, do you mind answering one question? Jerome has a question about, since we've been talking about these crazy temperatures.
Yeah.
Hi, Jerome.
Hi, Jerome.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to ask you, I never hear you talk about in October and November, when that, according to my count, both of those months were way below normal.
They were.
As far as I remember, we only got the average temperatures and above in December.
Yeah, and if you look, do you know that 8 of 12 months this year have been above normal? They were anomalous and unusual, and we had the fourth heaviest snowfall in November. Look, you know, extremes in climate doesn't mean you're not going to get cold, nor does it mean it's not going to snow. It means you're going to get cold and you're going to get snow less frequently, and that's exactly what's been going on. So that doesn't upset the apple cart, and that's not the sign that, you know, the planet's not in a warming phase at all. That's a period of weather anomalies right there. And when you stand back and look at the big picture, this year we'll have had 8 of 12 months that have been above normal. Wow. And I think we've had something like, 22 of the last 26 months have all been above normal. And the year as a whole is abnormally wet, another byproduct of a warmer environment. And it's all, you know, it's also one in which we've had more record highs than we've had record lows.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And things just keep going in that direction. All right, Tom, I know this is still a ways out, but you know people are already picking out their outfits. They're getting their noisemakers out. They're putting on hats. Yeah. I can only imagine what you guys are doing up at the weather office to prepare for New Year's Eve.
It's like a party in this office, you know, year-round.
I was going to say, how would New Year's Eve be different than Wednesday?
It's not. In fact, if you walked by this office, you'd presume it was New Year's Eve every night, you know.
But that's why people love you. Because they know you're dedicated to your craft, but you also know how to cut loose and have a good time.
That's right. I work with a whole group of people that are just as crazy as I am over here, you know. But we have fun. We do. Well, you're asking them.
Yes. What's it going to be like weather-wise?
Here's the deal. We've got a weather system coming up here on Monday, and it will produce probably some sun in the morning, but clouds that come in during the day and a chilly rain with a 41-degree high temperature on Monday. Could even be a wintry mix at the start, and then it may trend more to some snow showers. We're going to have to watch the track of that. It's not a superstorm, but what will happen then on Tuesday, New Year's Day, is that cold air will be washing in the backside of this thing. So we'll have started around 31 and fall down to 12 Tuesday night, Wednesday morning. And Wednesday could only be, might stay at 22, with a low at night in the teens, but with some single digits out in the suburbs. But then the Pacific air comes back in. We're up to 35 Thursday and probably in the 40s by next Friday again. So it's one of these quick hits of cold air.
It's out. And tomorrow you said maybe a dusting, a few snow showers, nothing big to worry about, correct?
No. In fact, we'll have started the day, you know, above freezing, and we'll have been above freezing all night. Okay. So I don't think there may be a couple of these snow showers will become vigorous enough in the afternoon or at night to briefly coat the ground, particularly tomorrow night when it gets dark and down below freezing. But this doesn't look like a huge snow event. That's going on north and west of us.
All right. Well, if people have to travel, they have to deal with it. If we're sitting here, we're good to go. Tom, it is always a pleasure. I will talk to you tomorrow, if that's all right with you.
Brian, I look forward to it, and it's always great talking to you.
And
Brian,
the feeling is more than mutual. So we will talk again tomorrow, Tom. Thanks.
You, sir.
Take care.
Bye bye.
Bye bye. That's the great Tom Skilling. You hear him every day here with Ro and Anna. Brian Noonan in for Ro Khan and Anna DeVlantes, 720 WGN. After 4:30, comedian Des Bishop will join us. He's from New York, now lives in Ireland. But now we need to turn our attention to what matters a little closer to home. If you remember, the inaugural Women's March in Grant Park in just after the 2017 inauguration of the president drew about a quarter of a million people, men and women, closing down parts of the city. The anniversary march a year later topped that participation, about 300,000 people taking to the loop. In the last couple days, there have been conflicting headlines about a march. Was there another Women's March scheduled for January here in Chicago? Was there not? As I said, differing headlines, differing information coming out, so we figured we would find out the facts and go right to the Women's March Chicago Board, and Board President Jackie Algie joins me now on WGN. Jackie, thanks for taking some time this afternoon.
Thank you for having me.
All right, so I know, as I mentioned, a lot of conflicting information. Headlines the other day said that you, the Women's March Chicago, had canceled the march, citing a lack of manpower, lack of resources, but also in an effort to distance yourself from the national chapter. Now, today, information is coming out, said, listen, we didn't plan a march in January. We had moved our march to October for a march for the polls, and, you know, we told people there wasn't going to be a march in January. We want people to do things in their community. What's the story?
That is correct. Let's clarify and make sure that everyone in your listening audience gets it right this time.
Well, listen, we don't, Jackie, you know, facts don't really matter.
Our intent has never been to confuse people, right?
Right.
But we did do two marches this year. One in January, as you stated, that drew over 300,000, and then again in October. And the purpose of that one was to specifically help to get out the vote. And we feel like, you know, it did help to, you know, empower people, educate people, and then, you know, help to get us the blue tsunami that we ended up with, mm-hmm. as well as the blue wave throughout the country. And so, with all of that said, we decided way back when we agreed that we were going to do another march right before the primary, because we knew that this election was just too important, that we would not help to mobilize people as we had promised in January, that we would not do another march in January, that we would help people to get out and really, you know, do community service or some form of service in their communities and perhaps outside of their communities, places that, you know, and organizations that they've never had contact with but certainly could use their support.
Now, we want people obviously working in their own communities, and we'll get back to that a little more. But let's go back to all the confusion. A lot of it, again, is coming from, Chicago Women's or March Women's March Chicago is not affiliated with the national chapter, and the national chapter is where a lot of this controversy is coming from. Give us a little background on that controversy as well.
Yeah, so let me give you a little background on that. So post 2016 election in November, women from all over the country and outside decided that they wanted to do a series of marches. There were three women here in the Chicagoland area who came together online, had never met, and or started to formulate what was then, you know, some march planning and to bring together people who either had expertise and background in that, or just people that really wanted to do something. And so came together, did the march in January of 2017. That then became Women's March Chicago. We did not go to Washington, D.C. We got no funding or resources or support from the D.C. March. Really proud of the D.C. March and all the marches that took place around the country, as well outside of the country, but we stood alone in the sense that we're independent. We did our own crowdsourcing. We did our own fundraising. And, you know, in terms of support, our support came from local organizations and individuals. And that's the way it has been for the two marches that were subsequent to that one, that mm-hmm. Women's March Chicago did. Now, Women's March, Inc. is the national organization that did the march in Washington, D.C., and that's part of some of the controversy that's going on now, but we are not affiliated with them. In fact, there is another national women's organization, Women's March organization, that's called March On,
okay.
And that is who Women's March Chicago affiliates with.
So you were with March On, and even though there will be a number of marches around the country in January, there, you know, and a lot of them are affiliated with that, and a lot of them around the Chicago area, you're saying I guess the confusion comes, and I just want you to reiterate this. The confusion comes because people are saying you had planned to have a march in January, and now you're saying that because of volunteer hours and resources and the confusion of the alignment with the national district that you've canceled that. This march, no, so you're saying this march was never going to happen.
We never planned. We never planned a march in January, no. All right, we moved those efforts to October so that we could help to mobilize people, as we did, mm-hmm. for the October or the November primary.
So what?
Or midterm, I'm sorry. That's November midterm. Mm-hmm.
For people who are thinking, well, it's a march. People just showed up. Give us an inkling into what goes into how many volunteer hours had to be in. I know for the first march, my wife was a marshal. And so I know she had to come down and do some training and things like that.
Right.
And she was at last year's march as well. What goes into organizing this march? What you said you crowdsourced a lot of it and got contributions from companies. Where does the difficulty then come in getting more resources and more hours for these volunteers?
Well, so majority of the volunteers, we'll just start with our board. So we have a small board, all of which are volunteers, and most of the women have careers. They mm-hmm. work, they are, you know, wives, mothers, they have families and other responsibilities. And so then you add on to that planning a march, as we did, that, you know, has garnered almost, you know, a million people.
Yeah.
From the three collectively. And so that takes a lot of work. Mm-hmm. It really takes a lot of work, which we're happy and proud to do. But if people remember from the beginning, we said we had a value statement that we issued at the march in January of 2017, which said that we were going to connect people that had perhaps never been connected before and to organizations that people had no knowledge of, that we were going to protect our families and others against, you know, some of the misogynists and other, you know, acts and actions that were taking place against women in particular, but against their families and their communities in general. And then we were going to mobilize people to get involved, not just to march. March is a wonderful thing. I've been marching most of my life. I'm a civil rights baby. I've been marching most of my life. But we've got to put that march into action, those steps into action. And that's what we want to see people do on January 19th.
So what kind of things, just off the top of your head, what kind of things can people do to get involved? What kind of things can they do to push the movement forward?
So there are tons of community organizations who are grassroots, who need help on a daily basis, you know, and annually. And I'm not talking just in terms of fundraising, but just basic help. You've got food pantries that need volunteers to help serve food. You've got homeless shelters that need people to help either bring food and serve food. You've got violence prevention programs that are working with youth all over the city. And we talk about the violence, but what are we doing to help address it? We've got just issues against women that are taking place in the workplace and in their communities. What are we doing to really, you know, foster or build relationships with those organizations who are working to protect women and women's rights in the workplace and out? So there are tons of organizations, including faith organizations as well, but there are just organizations all over the city and throughout this state that, you know, could use people and use support. We've got some other ideas. There are young people who are millennials who I talked with some earlier who want to do something on that day. They might do some action, and we might partner with them to do that. But it's helping the young people to understand, hey, we're getting ready for another election come February, and it's just as important that you get out and get out the vote as you did this past November. So, you know, there are mobilization kinds of activities that people can do. They can hold small gatherings and forums that give some education. It's like a civics 101, because we don't have civics in our schools any longer. They can, there are, to the election, there are people running for office. If we want to speak gender specific, sure, there are women who are running for mayor, women who are running for alderman, and they could host small fundraising gatherings. And, you know, it doesn't have to be huge amounts of money, but we know races, presidential races,
that cost a lot of money.
Dollar donations, right?
A lot of money. So anything you can do to help. Now, you also wanted to warn people against Women's March Chicago called phony marches that are just there to sell merchandise. How do people tell the difference?
Well, we have a website, and people need to go to that, www.womensmarchchicago.org, and we will have a toolkit on that website that will list a number of ideas and opportunities that will connect them to organizations. And these are organizations that are either a part of our coalition or certainly organizations that have partnered with and participated in the Women's March events in the past. And so we trust them, and we know that they are, you know, on the up and up, if you would. And you know, we wouldn't post it if they, you know, were not. So.
All right. Well, Jackie, I appreciate you coming on and straightening things out. What's are any marches planned in the future, or are you going to stick more with community projects?
Like I said, I've been marching all my life.
Sure.
So, you know, anytime there's always a reason to march.
Of course.
Always a reason to march, but there's also always a reason to put those steps into action. And hopefully people will do just that on January 19th. And whether we do, you know, if we have a collective gathering somewhere in the downtown area, they can come and join us for that. But then we'll have a list on our website of events that will be going on, or they can tell us themselves something that they might want to do, right, and say and post it, and we can post it for them and say, yeah, we're going to, you know, have whatever. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, support some
people that want to. That's right.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, Jackie, I appreciate the time this afternoon. Thanks for the work you've done, and we'll continue to do. I appreciate it.
I thank you so much, and you take care.
Thank you.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. Bye-bye. That is
see you
Jackie.
On the 19th, hopefully.
Yes,
all
ma'am.
Right. Take
That's
care.
Jackie Algie, the board president for Women's March Chicago. You can go to womensmarchchicago.org to get all the information. I'll just wait for Jimmy to hit the guitar. There we go. Very nice. On the other side of the news, Des Bishop is going to join us. Des Bishop is originally from New York. However, he now lives in Ireland, has lived in Ireland for quite some time. Huge star in Ireland, and he is coming to Chicago in January for some performances. So we will get to know Des Bishop on the other side. I keep wanting to say Des Bryant, and I know that would get Carm all excited, and yet it is not Des Bryant. It is a Des Bishop. All the Deses, Desi Arnaz, Des Bishop, Des Bryant, I get confused every time.
You're right there.
That Des Bryant would get y'all excited?
I mean, you did say Des Bryant, I'm like, and I did, something happened.
You double clutched, didn't you? You forgot all about your toe for a second.
Yeah, he's all injured, Des Bryant, but he's not Des Bishop?
He's not Des Bishop.
He's not Des Bishop.
No, Des Bishop is Des Bishop, Des Bryant is Des Bryant. All right, see, these people, we got to get more, you got to get names that don't sound like somebody else's name. Like Mark Carmen, that's easy. I get it. Mark Carmen. That's fine.
No,
Jim
Gordon,
I get. David Jenner, easy. If you were Mark, I don't know, Mark Hamill, then I'd wonder if you were the ice skating guy.
I do get a lot of, are you Mark Harmon?
Mark Harmon.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
He's a big star.
Right.
Yeah.
And I say I'd love to make the trade, but it doesn't work that way.
No, unfortunately it does not. You are you're on waivers for the big stardom.
Yeah.
You're here slugging away, and we appreciate it.
I mean, Harmon's got it going on.
He does. Of course he does. He was in summer school. Come on. Now he's an NCIS. No, he's not NCIS, is he? He's one of those shows.
Yeah, he's in there.
Brian Noonan in for Roanana, 720 WGN. Hear this music, get all your Irish pride up. A lot of my family still over there, and a man I'm sure they are very, very familiar with, a huge star in Ireland, coming to Chicago January 9th to the 12th at Zanies Downtown. Des Bishop joins me. Des, welcome. Thanks for taking some time. Good to talk to you.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Now, I got to be honest, I was starting to watch your stuff. I was reading the bio, and I'm like, all right, I got to watch some of Dez's clips that are all over YouTube and his website, desbishop.net. And I thought, this guy's going to sound exactly like all my cousins from Cork. I'm going to hear this beautiful this beautiful Irish brogue lilting out through the material. I hear a guy with a New York accent, and I was a little confused. Explain.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm from Queens, but I moved to Ireland when I was 14, and... Again, well, the joke I tell is how I ended up moving to Ireland was I got kicked out of St. Francis Prep in Fresh Meadows, Queens. And why I got kicked out of there was, for a 14-year-old, I had a serious problem with alcohol. So of all the places in the world to be sent, I was sent to Ireland. I guess they wanted to turn me into a Premier League alcoholic. But it's only partially true. And, yeah, no, I went to boarding school there. It was like a long, you know, like a silly, you know, just like a moment in our lives. And suddenly I'm in Ireland. There was no plan in advance. Staying with cousins and different things when I wasn't in boarding school. And then I sort of never left. I went to college, got into comedy when I was there. Most of my comedy career has been in Ireland. So I'm really just an Irish comedian with a New York accent.
That's very nice. And you came to the people of Ireland's attention, not through stand-up initially, but through a really interesting TV show, the Des Bishop Work Experience. It sounds like a fascinating experiment. Tell people what that was.
Yeah, well, actually, it was so first of all, it was a series about living on minimum wage and what that experience would have been like. We filmed that in 2003, so the minimum wage in Ireland at the time was $6.35. I think at the time you would have said maybe that was about $10 an hour,
okay.
But it was inspired by this book called Nickel and Dime, which was actually quite popular in the United States. American journalist Barbara Ehrenreich, but she had gone undercover to sort of have the American experience of living on minimum wage. But we weren't undercover. We got permission from these places. And it was really just, well, it was meant to, it was largely, we thought it was going to be about, like, what's it like to live on that money and the way that you get treated and all that. But because Ireland was experiencing immigration for the first time, you know, when you think of Ireland, like, certainly in America, you think of Irish people as immigrants to America. People leave Ireland, you know, but Ireland was booming at the time. And suddenly there was Chinese people and Eastern Europeans. And all the people that were doing these low-wage jobs were all people from those countries. So it became largely about that sort of first generation of Irish immigrants coming into Ireland and how they saw Ireland and how Irish people treated them. So, you know, it was at times funny, at times controversial. And, I mean, it was always interesting, but I guess because it was like it was sort of a lucky moment in time, it was the first time where Irish people were really seeing themselves through the eyes of how they treat immigrants rather than how they got treated when they went to America or they went to England or they went to Australia.
And being an immigrant to Ireland yourself, were you surprised at how much you and the show were embraced?
Well, I mean, it literally changed my life. So, yes, I was definitely surprised. I mean, it was an overnight thing. And I guess the first episode particularly was quite controversial because it was in a kebab shop called Abracababra. And it was like a late night. I know it's funny. People always laugh at that. It's actually a chain in Ireland. It's
Is
not
it really?
Just like a one-off.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, it's like that. It was the place where after the clubs closed, everybody went. So you were getting that sort of full-on drunken person shouting at staff experience.
Yeah.
So it was pretty full on. And like, certainly the locals of the area didn't come across great in it, you know, because you're looking at that sort of 3 a.m. Nobody's looking great. So there were some people that thought it was amazing. And there's some people that were very angry that they were being shown in that light. So it generated, you know, days after. I mean, you know, Twitter didn't exist, actually.
It was probably,
I don't
best,
know if I'm
right?
happy or sad that Twitter didn't exist at that time. But it was very much at that, you know, in 2003, the controversy of the time would be on talk radio for a couple of days. So it sort of took over the zeitgeist for a couple of days, and then suddenly I was a household name.
So had you been, maybe I was mistaken, had you been doing stand-up before you did the Des Bishop Work Experience?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right, so you'd been
I started doing stand-up in 97. That was 2003. So I was already, I had already actually done one or two, like, small TV things up to then, which is how I got picked to do the, because it wasn't my idea. It was actually a woman from RT came to me with the idea. So, yeah, I wasn't totally unknown when I did it, but I was certainly unknown enough that I was able to do the job undercover. I mean, I think maybe I did four jobs, 1 month each, and I think maybe three times somebody came into one of the jobs and was like, "Hey, didn't I see you in the laughter lounge?" You know, it was I wasn't known enough that people didn't believe that I was just another guy behind the counter, you know, doing the job.
So, what made you? And as I did stand up for a long time, what was it that made you decide to go into stand up? Because I always find that fascinating. Everybody's got their own different reason or their own different first step into it.
Yeah, I mean, I always wanted to be a performer. You know, I didn't think it would be possible that I would be able to do it for a career. But from a very young age, I kind of felt like, you know, inclined to try to make people laugh and all that. So that's a common enough story.
Sure.
And then when I was in college, I got into the Drama Society, but I was still drinking quite heavily. And coincidentally enough, I got sober after my first year. And it was a guy, it was an AA guy that actually pushed me towards doing stand-up rather than just doing plays, because he was actually a resident MC in this comedy club. And I didn't really believe that I could do it, you know?
Yeah.
But he got an inkling that it would suit me. And, I mean, it was immediate, the sort of getting on stage. Because it wasn't a long journey for me from thinking, will I do this, to trying it. It kind of was sort of thrust upon me. But once it started, it was an immediate addiction. I sort of dove in head first.
And was there, you know, every comic, of course, struggles at the beginning a little bit. Were there unique challenges being an American expat in Ireland trying to do stand-up in another country?
Nah, I mean, it was the opposite. Like, it was a crutch, really, because Irish people saw me as American, but I was educated in Ireland, so I knew a lot about Ireland. So I got laughs that I didn't really deserve, in that I was just doing very casual, simple observations about Ireland, or doing like pretty good Irish accents. And that just blew Irish people away, because they're used to like Tom Cruise far and away, like, "Oh, Shannon," you know, like terrible Irish accents from Americans.
Right.
And to them, I'm just as American as Tom Cruise. They don't really connect with me as an Irishman, especially in those early days.
Yeah.
So when I was busting out like a perfect Cork accent, I mean, they were literally like giving me standing ovations. And it wasn't that funny, but whatever. It's a scenario, you know. You just,
yeah,
there's nothing you can do about it. It's just the way that I was perceived. So, but where the negative kicked in about that was, so, you know, I'm 2 or 3 years into my comedy career, and I literally think I'm Chris Rock, you know, like I think I'm the best comedian ever.
Sure.
And then I set foot outside Ireland, and I'd say 7% of what I had was funny outside of Ireland. You know, I was so reliant on that fish out of water comedy experience that I had a serious land. The first time I experienced it, I went to Edinburgh, to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, and I was terrible. I mean, literally terrible.
Wow.
So,
and that stays with you, and you realize real quick, because people who haven't been on stage, if you're bombing, there's sometimes nothing you can do about it, and you just got to take it and then come off and figure out what you're going to do. So then I'm guessing you just started writing different things and not relying Irish material.
It's funny. It comes in ebbs and flows. You know, after that, I really started to think that I became obsessed about people abroad finding me funny, like as if I needed to sort of prove myself.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that was actually going pretty well. But funnily enough, when I got that series in 2003, I canceled Edinburgh in 2003, and then my life kind of changed. Like, I became like a big name in Ireland. So I actually kind of ignored the rest of the world for quite a few years. And then it wasn't until like 2008, 2009 that I started sort of. So for the last 10 years, I've been more of an international comic, but I had a bit of a break in those early sort of successful years in Ireland, you know, mainly because I just was so busy in Ireland. But, you know, particularly in the last, since I went to China, I did this Chinese project. Since I've done that, I've really not been in Ireland full time and sort of focusing more on developing outside of Ireland.
Well, in the Chinese project, it's hard enough to do stand up in your native language. So you, years ago in 2007, you decided, you know what, I'm going to learn Irish. I'm going to learn, and I'm going to do a 60-minute set in the native language of Ireland. And you did that.
Yes.
And now you've gone, then you went to China and you learned Mandarin. And you're doing stand up in Mandarin. I have a hard enough time putting together sentences in English. Do you have a natural inclination to pick up languages? It had to be very difficult. But how long a process was the Mandarin one?
Well, yeah, I mean, the both of them are connected in a way. So I would have never known. I wasn't good at languages in school or anything. And the learning the Irish language project was a little bit more motivated by the fact that I knew that Irish people would find it interesting because they all have to learn it at school, but none of them learn it well, and they all sort of resent it. So I knew I was jumping into something that was going to connect with everybody. But as it turned out, I was really good at learning the language, and I was very successful in, you know, doing stand-up, and it was kind of like a, you know, it was just such an interesting experience for me. So I had also had this slight obsession about China. I had been there a couple of times. I'm from Flushing, Queens. I mean, that doesn't mean anything to the Chicago listeners, but it's completely Chinese nowadays, and okay. I had sort of watched that happen in my lifetime. So I really did want to learn the Chinese language, and this was a really good way to do it. Plus, I thought, when I initially started pitching it, it was 2008. It was leading up to the Beijing Olympics, so there was a lot of international focus on China. But I actually didn't get the funding for the project until 2013. So the Chinese thing, see, the Chinese is obviously more difficult to learn than yeah. Gaelic, but the immersion experience is so much greater in China, in that so few people can speak English, and you really have to use the language as quick as possible when you learn it. So I actually think that I learned Chinese quicker, and I got better at Chinese in the period of time that I had of 1 year.
Okay.
Because you just get a chance to use it so much more.
So you got to
remember, when you're in the Irish-speaking area of Ireland, everybody can speak English. So sure. They're literally sitting there going, like, okay, come on, what are you trying to say? You know, they really have to have patience with you. Whereas in China, if you can't speak the language, then you can't communicate, for the most part. So that does help you to learn the language pretty quick.
And your Irish
and then the
project...
next challenge is... Well, go ahead.
Oh, no, it's the next... What's the next challenge? Is being
finding
able to
out what
use
makes
it.
Them laugh.
That is very tough. So you're Irish.
Actually, that was easier than I expected because, first of all, they don't have like stand-up as we know it.
Okay.
So it was quite novel for them. I mean, there were some young guys that were trying it out, but in general, it was quite novel for them to sort of see this freewheeling sort of Western style of comedy. And because they were so open to my stories, essentially I was going back to the beginning of my career, Total Fish Out of Water, they were so open to my stories of how I perceived China.
Yeah.
Once it wasn't critical, you know, once it was fun, that actually it was easier than I thought. I mean, I was really able to get some pretty good belly laughs once I had a halfway decent command of the language.
That's amazing. As I said, it's hard enough to be funny in your native tongue. Your Irish project, though, they now has been used to try to reevaluate how Gaelic is taught to kids in school, right?
Well, I tried. I mean, after that, I was like really deeply into it for a while, and I actually went to the Minister for Education, and I did try to get the curriculum changed. I mean, it hasn't really changed. I mean, there's been some changes that I don't think they have anything to do with me, but there was some changes where they increased the percentage of how much the oral Irish, you know, like in other words, like how good your speaking is. They increased the importance of that on the exam. But in general, there hasn't really been that many changes. I mean, it's really a terrible pity. I mean, it doesn't mean much over here, but, you know, they spend all of their elementary school and all of their their high school learning this language, and very few leave with any level of fluency, which I just feel like it's a total waste. I mean, you could literally just show movies from these kids from the age of 6 to the age of 18. Just show them movies every time they sit down in Irish and get a better result than what they get, you know, the way that they teach it. But, you know, in terms of, you know, it's the same with kids in American schools learning Spanish. I mean, it's really taught badly. You know, the way that people would get a proficiency in speaking the language it would not be the way that they teach it. But unfortunately, it's very hard to evaluate that. And since we're such a testing culture, you know, the only way to do it is to test you on the grammar and test you on all these things.
Right.
And unfortunately, that doesn't lead to fluency.
No, and that's, you know, people have trouble learning all types of languages through that situation. Now, Des, you mentioned you work all over the country, or all over the world, Australia, Ireland, China. You're coming to Chicago. What's the main differences between an American audience and international audiences?
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, I don't find that many, but that's because I guess I've become a bit desensitized to the differences.
Right.
Like, I just, in each place, I figure it out. And you know, I mean, I find American audiences pretty willing to laugh. Like, they're pretty...
they're pretty supportive. There's definitely a little more whooping, you know. There's a little bit more sort of like cheering sort of thing at an American show. I mean, I'll tell you where you get a big difference. For example, like I do the Melbourne International Comedy Festival, mm-hmm. and that city is just very left-leaning, liberal city. And I'm not being critical of that, but you can feel the difference when you're at the Melbourne Comedy Festival to the Sydney Comedy Festival. Now, that's just one country, but for whatever reason, the Melbourne crowd are definitely a little more sort of a little more uptight and also right on. Now, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with being right on. I mean, in a way, it kind of leans towards my politics, really. However, in a comedy club, sometimes that can just feel a bit stiff, you know? So I think maybe some American comics that do more of the American road would probably say the same things. Different cities have, you know,
yeah, different regions,
different fields. Or actually, the guys say it. Like in Manhattan, there's a certain vibe, and then in Brooklyn, there's a different vibe.
Right.
But in terms of country to country, I haven't found that much. I mean, I really enjoy going on the road in America. You know, don't get me wrong. I love doing gigs here in New York City, and it's fun. But there is something great about, you know, just being in, like, you know, I'm
being
in Minnesota,
Chicago,
for example. I'm in Minneapolis the week before I go to Chicago, and I just can't wait to talk to these people who, in a way, I have no connection to, really, other than the fact that I'm American.
Right.
But I don't know the experience of Minnesota, and I just love going there and making them laugh, and just, you know, like the universality of the things we talk about. Those are the shows that I enjoy the most, and I have found those crowds to be the most sort of into it slash sort of willing to laugh, because I think that, you know, I think sometimes, like, in the more urban cosmopolitan areas, people are kind of a bit cynical, you know?
Yeah, well, we're looking forward to seeing you January 9th through the 12th at Zany's Downtown. DesBishop.net is the website. You're a fascinating guy, man. I look forward to talking to you when you come to town.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks for having me on
Take
the show.
Take care, Des. My pleasure. All right, that is Des Bishop. You can see him at Zany's Downtown January 9th through the 12th. Oh, my. I think just a year ago at this time of the season, nobody wanted anything to do with talking about the Bears except for putting heads on pikes and running people out of town. And now we cannot wait as we break down all the possible playoff scenarios for the Bears. Mark Carman going to jump on. We're going to talk a little Bears. If you have a question, of course, you can always let us know, 312-981-7200. Carman, before we get to the Bears, yesterday we talked about Derrick Rose coming into town. Tom Thibodeau has to be one of the happiest men on the planet. Since he was sent packing by the Bulls, he's come back. He's 5-1 against his former team. And for a guy who's pretty intense, he has to let a smile or two crack last night.
He definitely enjoyed his stay at the United Center last evening. But he, you know, that team is not in the playoffs, and there's some heat on Tibbs up there in Minnesota.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that turns out. But yes, that was a nice night for D. Rose, Tom Thibodeau, and the Timber Bulls. Throw Lou Aldang, Taj Gibson in there as well.
Yeah, how about it? Rose, 24 points in 38 minutes. He shot 11 for 19. You know, seemed very happy, as you reported earlier. Chance of MVP, and you know, again, I don't wish the man ill. I'm glad he had a good game. I'm glad he's still able to play. It's just you know,
you're not a D. Rose guy.
I'm not, because he's not a Bull. He was a Bull for a very short time, and it, you know, I felt bad for him. I understand, you know, you can't, if you're an athlete, you can't help that you get injured. It wasn't his fault. The crazy knee when he just was standing on the sideline and jumped, you know, was that the second time the ACL? He had just come back and he was like celebrating something, not even a crazy celebration, just like bounced a little on it, and it was like, oh no.
The second injury at Portland was rough. But remember now, Mr. Noonan, he was the
youngest MVP I know.
Yeah, and okay, but he also, you know, he played 7 years here.
It seems like so long ago, Carm, that maybe that's why I forget that.
Yeah. I mean,
seems like ages.
Also, I mean, I'm just looking at the numbers here. He played in those 7 years. He played
12 games.
Right. Not enough games. He played over 50 games. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of the years.
Okay.
And then there was a 39 game. 2011-12. That was the year that he got injured in the playoffs, and then he missed all of next season.
Right.
And then he only played 10 games in 13-14 when he got injured again. So, yeah, it was a great start
the first
3.5 years.
That's right. I think I'm remembering the latter part of the career more so than the beginning. I'm focusing on when he left, and, you know, there was all the controversy of when he, you know, I have to make sure that I can walk into my kid's graduation. You remember that whole big big thing?
Yes.
And
yes,
I don't blame a guy for taking care of himself. Obviously, you want to be healthy down the road, but maybe just keep that to yourself. If that's how you're feeling, shut up.
Right. He was better though with his actions than he was with his words.
Yes.
And although he was hurt as well. But his teammates always loved him.
Sure.
Which was not the case with Jimmy.
No.
And we're seeing how this played out with Jimmy in Minnesota and now how it's going to play out in Philly. So, anyway, I'm a Derrick Rose fan.
I know you are.
And, you know, there was a lot of media in this town that took a lot of shots at him. Joe Colley was not easy on him in the Sun-Times. And you would have, you know, after games, the whole media horde would be there, and Colley would be asking questions, and Derek would answer them. You know, a lot of guys, they run from that, right?
Right.
He stood right there, and he wouldn't really look him in the eye much, but he would answer the questions.
Right. And, you know, that's good for him. I'm glad he had a big night last night. I'm glad, you know, he's still a Chicago guy, so you got to root for the Chicago guy.
There you go.
All right, so let's turn our attention. This is turning into some sort of crazy mafia-style FBI flowchart with the different scenarios. There's three big scenarios of what can happen for the Bears on Sunday. Three potentially different opponents for the playoffs. You've got the Eagles, you got the Seahawks, and of course you have the Vikings.
And throw in the bye. So
sure, okay.
We can throw that in there too.
Is the bye, will you concede that the bye is by far the longest shot?
Yes, absolutely.
All right. So the bye we'll put on the back burner. Yes, it's an option, but so is me winning the lottery tomorrow, winning the Powerball for $300 and some million and never coming back.
Right. Bears would have to win. The Rams would have to lose at home to the 49ers, who the Bears beat on the road last week. Very unlikely.
Not going
to
happen. All right. Which scenario shall we go with first? Let's go with the Vikings first, because the Bears are playing the Vikings on Sunday in Minnesota. Lost to them earlier in the season. Trubisky gets injured in that game. We've been talking about it throughout the day. Bears going in there with Matt Nagy. He's got a plan and a process, he said. But he's also saying, listen, I have a plan and a process, but I have options as well.
Yes, they will be. Look, they're going to play their starters, sure, and they'll also be paying attention to the Rams and the Niners. And if the Rams are smoking San Francisco and the game is completely out of reach, maybe things will change in the second half, is what Nagy has said so far. I mean, the Bears beat the Vikings at home in week 11, 25-20, so they're looking to sweep them. Now, if they do, here we go. If you're talking about playing the Vikings in the playoffs, Brian,
yes.
So it would go like this: the Vikings beating the Bears, okay, on Sunday, so we lose, and the Seattle Seahawks would beat the Arizona Cardinals. Or there's another scenario: or the Bears beat the Vikings, and the Philadelphia Eagles lose to the Washington Redskins. So the Vikings could get in even if they lose. So there's two scenarios. Now, Philadelphia most likely is going to beat Washington.
Sure.
But if the Bears beat the Vikings, the Eagles lose, Vikings are still in.
So if the Vikings lose on Sunday to the Bears, which of course they will, and then the Eagles beat the Redskins, the Bears will be playing the Eagles,
correct,
who are coming off last year's Super Bowl victory, have a lot of experience in the playoffs, obviously, whereas the Bears, as you mentioned yesterday, only a couple guys with playoff experience.
Right. But interestingly, and Las Vegas knows everything, right?
Sure they do.
The early line here is that the Bears versus the Vikings in the playoffs, the Bears would be a roughly 3-point favorite. If the Bears played the Eagles, as of today, you know, obviously injuries could change these lines, but the Bears would be a 5-point favorite over Philly. So Vegas considers the Eagles to be an easier matchup, Minnesota to be the tougher matchup, if you want to look at what Vegas thinks of the matchups.
All right. Well, we always like to look to Vegas for their, for their fine judgment. Everything good coming out of Vegas. All right, so we've got the Vikings, we've got the Eagles. The Bears could play the Seahawks as well. What right. has to happen for the Bears to play the Seahawks?
So, playing Russell Wilson and the Seahawks, who the Bears also beat this year. That was back in week two, though, a long time ago. Seattle's playing great football right now. The Bears lose to Minnesota, and the Seahawks lose to the Cardinals. So then if Minnesota wins and Seattle loses, the Vikings would jump over Seattle and become the 5 seed.
All right. This is it's all very confusing, isn't it?
There's some moving parts here, but there's we got it.
Oh yeah, all listen, and I know the Bears are thinking this way. All they have to do is focus on the Vikings because everything else they have no control over anything but playing the Vikings for 60 minutes.
Right,
but that's all they can do.
But even in that scenario, that if they beat Minnesota, it's like okay, we're done with you. Oh no, we're not necessarily done with you because Philly just lost,
which has to play into Matt Nagy's game plan as well for Sunday because you know, granted, the Vikings have seen you all. Already, they you know what to do, but Nagy likes some of these fancy trick plays, like to throw out some surprises. Is he going to pull out the whole bag of tricks Sunday in an effort to win that game, or is he holding some back? And I'm sure he has plenty in his bag of tricks, but how much do you expose on Sunday, or do you figure the Vikings already know us? There's not really a whole lot we can do to surprise them.
See, now that is an interesting question and consideration for Matt Nagy, right? Now, this guy probably has 7 zillion plays that he loves. So he probably, like, okay, we'll try this one. And if we'll put that on tape because I've got 5 more plays that I want to try in the playoffs. But, you know, I don't know if he's thinking, you know what, this play I really, really, really do love, and it would be perfect against Minnesota, so I'm not going to use it this week. That would sound logical to me.
Yeah.
So I will never know the answers of if he's doing this or not doing this. I wouldn't think. I don't think he'd talk about that after the fact.
He's not gonna go, hey, guess what? I didn't use the plays. I'm breaking them out next week. Just wait.
But I do think it's tricky though. You're not only are you playing them, you know, for the second time this year. That's normal. That's what goes on in the division. But you have to consider you're playing them the next week. So there's definitely a lot of discussions going on up at Hal's Hall with what they want to put on tape, what they don't want to put on tape.
All right, and you mentioned Kyle Long in your last report. What's his status?
So getting better and is available this week. Highly unlikely, I would think, that he would play this week. But there's a, you know, I think, it, to me, it, if you read the tea leaves, it sounds like he's going to play in the playoffs, which would be, you know, a big addition for the Bears.
Right.
Very happy to be here. And Kyle Long, too. I mean, if anybody deserves to be on the field, if the Bears make, you know, are in the playoffs, it's that guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Been here forever.
Had to suffer through horrible seasons.
Had to stare at Jay Cutler, and he defended him over and over and over again to the media. I mean, that's like the toughest job in all of football, defending that guy.
Almost as hard as you defending Derrick Rose nonstop.
But you know what's interesting in tying the Bears in with Derrick Rose? Huh. What was more likely? The Bears were going to be on the verge of 12 wins this year, or Derrick Rose was going to come back, score nearly 20 a game, and be the sixth man of the year after he was out of the league for a little bit last year? I mean, those were both highly unlikely.
I was going to say neither one of those would have made me lay down a nice bet somewhere.
Right.
That would
have
been rough. And Kyle Long, another guy who, you know, unfortunate with all the injuries. So it's best, as you said, it's best to not play him Sunday because, God forbid, he gets hurt again, you know, save him for the playoffs.
Well, in my mind, though, he's been out for so long that if he can get on the field, you want him to get reps. But if he's not 100%, then, of course, you don't.
Right. So, yeah, but maybe again, it's that scenario where you're watching, and if things are well in hand in Minnesota and things are, you know, well in hand for the Rams – you go, all right, let's give him some reps at the end of the, you know, fourth quarter or something, when it's just to get him out there, get some of the rust off, and then not risk him, you know, lot.
That's an interesting scenario too, that where you sort of ease him in. But that's the thing with football, right? You've got 53 guys on a roster. You dress 46 for game day, right? People are saying, "Well, rest him." Well, who are you going to rest?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and
everybody.
So
everybody
rests. I'm going to rest the offensive line. So okay, so now you got your backup offensive lineman out there. You got your quarterback out there who might get killed because you're playing the backup offensive line, right? So and then. or your running backs are going to get killed, or even your backup quarterback. You know, it's not easy to rest guys in football. It's not like the NBA where you got a roster that's, you got 12 guys dressed. People can sit the whole game. It's a little harder to do in the NFL.
All right. Well, we will, we'll keep talking about this. And I'm sure, what time's the beat on this weekend? You on Saturday?
We got a White Sox weekly 6 to 7, and then a short, extravaganza of the beat 7 to 7:30.
I know you will be talking about Bears nonstop.
Bears.
We will, all Bears all the time. And again, it's nice, isn't it? It's got to be lovely for you to have people interested in the Bears again in a positive manner.
Yeah, I think, it's cool.
Fun to talk about.
Yeah, and I think what's been cool about this team is that they have connected with, I think, a lot of people that haven't been watching football for a long time, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Just your standard, normal, I live my everyday life. If the Bears are interesting, then I'll put them on. I mean, they've gotten that fan back this year.
Yeah, and it's nice to be back. All right, we got to take a quick break. But I have to, Carm, please don't wander far, because we've been getting a number of calls about a certain question.
Okay.
We have to, people, inquiring minds want to know. So, yes, we're gonna put you on the spot, because, listen, I want to know, too, but everybody else wants to know as well. All right. We've got a lot of time before the news, but a burning question. Ben, who has been producing all afternoon, says to me, hey, we're getting a lot of calls about this, where a lot of people want to know. I didn't even know this was a possibility, but I guess, Carm, you mentioned your lovely girlfriend yesterday and her questionable Christmas gift. You guys have been together for I don't know how long, but the question that everybody wants to know is, did Carm pop the question? Now, is this something you would like to share now that you're on the hook? Did you, in fact, pop the question?
The answer is no.
Okay.
I have not. I do appreciate the interest, I think.
Well, people have heard all your dating tales of woe for all these many years, so it's only, if you're going to live that part of your life here, they want to hear the happy stuff, too.
I would call them dating tales of amazement, but okay. Woe is probably more accurate. We're progressing nicely, Brian. We've been together for, it'll be 2 years.
That's
in March.
Good for you.
I think that's a nice time frame. There's no rush.
Don't let people pressure you.
Right.
That's it. That if the time is right, the time is right. It's between you two, and a little piece of advice from a guy who's been married for a while. You want to make sure she's going to say yes. Because I don't know if you, I know you, Carm, I don't know if you bounce back from a no.
Yeah, a no,
quite
would,
frankly.
No would be tough. There's no doubt about that.
I don't know if that's something Mark Carman can ride out.
Well, hopefully it won't come to that,
yes,
Brian.
I'm sure it won't. That's why I'm saying you just got to be sure.
Right. Well, I'm trying to figure out how do people do these things? Like they get the roses and the dinner and the this and the that. And
don't do it in public. That would be my suggestion.
You gotta walk,
do it in private.
Really? Because people they love to walk by the bean and take pictures and all that stuff.
In the end, it's between you and her.
Yes. I mean, do I got to get a canoe and, like, kayak down?
Why would you do that?
Why would you?
What if you tip over and the ring falls out? What are you going to wear to a white steed and ride up like all of a sudden you're a Sir Galahad? Maybe you're on the tennis court. You lob it to her. You just hit the box over the net. See if she catches it.
Yeah.
Like that.
Right. I mean, tennis, that'd be beautiful, though.
Sure. You do a tennis thing.
Right.
That's your thing.
Right. And then you just open up a possibility there. I talked to one of my friends recently. I did it in the kitchen. I don't know about doing the whole kitchen.
Prince Harry did it in the kitchen.
The kitchen?
Megan, they were making a chicken.
Making a chicken, and here's the ring?
That's not a euphemism either. They were actually cooking, they were cooking waterfowl. Chicken's not waterfall. So they were, anything. I did it in my living room.
The old living room move.
Well, sure. She drove up. I had a sign on my balcony, and she came in, and I had the roses and the ring and the whole deal, and it was very nice.
Were there cookies?
I don't remember being cookies. I know that we did it, and then I had to go do a show. So it's like, come on, you're coming to the club with me. But you can do it any way you want. And here's the thing: however you do it, it's going to be perfect.
Okay,
because she's gonna love it. You're going to remember it. So however you decide, you can't go wrong. You're asking the big question. You know, as long as The Rock is there, and not Dwayne Johnson, but as long as the jewelry is there and it's looking good. you're fine.
Yeah, but I got to think about a radio bit, too. I got to think about it.
No, you don't.
You don't. You can keep some things private.
Yeah, because quite frankly, the radio bit could go away tomorrow for all of us.
Kim, that's true, too. Kim just stared me down with that one. No, yes. You don't. Keep it private. I think that's more of a...
Sure, you can always tell the story.
I can help you out with this. I've helped plan several of these.
Yeah, oh, wow. Just do something nice. Don't be a goofball.
Right, see, there it is. Do something nice.
Do something nice. That doesn't mean do something over the top silly. That doesn't mean you have to skydive in.
Between the two of you, that's all that matters.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Don't put it in food where she's going to choke on it. Don't put it on the scoreboard at one of your many sporting events.
It would be. I mean, Northwestern is playing Columbia coming up here. That's a big game, right on the scoreboard there.
Yeah, you could do that. Right. Yeah.
It could be on the kiss cam.
Ugh. Ugh. Make it into a hot take. Turn your proposal into a hot take. Marrying me is the best thing that's ever happened to you.
That's a great
312-981-7200.
Would you marry me? And if you would, how would you want to be proposed to? These are options.
Sure.
Well, let's just go with it now. Come on.
We do a whole lot of stuff. All right. You know what we have to go with now? We have to go with this break, and then we have to go with news. But we'll put this all in the hopper. We'll revisit at some point. Brian Noonan in for Roe and Anna. You've been hearing the reports starting yesterday. The doors opened at a fascinating new museum in Whiting, Indiana. A big pink building. And that is the Mascot Hall of Fame. If you've watched, Benny the Bull, Tommy Hawk, Ribby and Rhubarb back in the day for the White Sox. You know these mascots. And Orestes Hernandez is the executive director of that the Mascot Hall of Fame. He joins me now. Orestes, thanks for taking some time. I know you guys have been inundated with requests. People are, one, fascinated by mascots and the Hall of Fame. And two, they're thinking, this is very cool. How did this end up in Whiting, Indiana? How did you end up in Whiting, Indiana?
Hey, Brian, thanks so much for having us. We're thrilled to get the media attention and the public's attention. You know, you're right. This place is a little kooky in terms of what we got going on, and it's in the exact right place here in Whiting, Indiana, a little quirky little town on the south side of the lake. I come from Miami. I was born and raised in Miami, and I just came up to this area, to Northwest Indiana, 7 weeks ago.
Wow.
So the weather's a little different, but I tell you what, it's a really exciting time to be a part of this project.
So give us a little timeline of the evolution of the Hall of Fame.
So the creator of the Hall of Fame concept is Dave Raymond. He's the original Philly Fanatic. And he came after some things that happened relating to mascots. He came up with this concept, and it lived as an online Hall of Fame honoring mascots that do so many great things. You know, they're you may have heard it before, and we'll keep saying it. They're the unsung heroes of sport, and they don't always get the media attention that they want. You know, because they're doing great things that are behind the scenes.
Sure.
You know, it's that concept of, what do you do when people aren't watching? And when people aren't watching, they're going to the hospitals, and they're going to the cancer wards, and they're going to school. So this is a place where we can honor their good things in the community in a unique educational museum setting with some interactive exhibits for kids.
So it starts online. Then it's, how does Whiting become the home? Because you'd think, well, the Philly Fanatics started this. It was an online thing. Why isn't it in Philly? How did it make it from there to Whiting, Indiana? Which most people know. You know, we flock to Whiting in the summer for Pierogi Fest. And other than that, we're I don't know how much time we're spending in Whiting.
Well, I have a feeling a lot more people are going to spend a little bit more time in Whiting. So I'm new to the region, so I've only heard of the amazingness of Pierogi Fest, the three-day week festival.
Just wait.
That's what I keep hearing. And, I've seen videos and photos, and I can't wait to do it. Whiting has been, kind of that summer destination for tourism and for the beach and for the business district here. And the quirkiness of Pierogi Fest, my understanding, is so great that this is a perfect match. And this is a really this is a reason where people can come all year round. It's not just a summer place.
Right.
We're hoping to bring business to the business district here on 119th Street in the in Whiting year round.
So you've got a two-story 25,000-foot square building. It's at 1851 Front Street. You've got the exhibits, which we'll talk about, but then you have a space up top that you're going to try to make a meeting space and a multi-purpose, all sorts of things.
That's right. So we're a three-story, 25,000-square-foot facility. The third level, like you mentioned, is really a place where the community can come and be engaged in this building. We're going to host corporate meetings, luncheons, chamber events, networking events. Companies can have and get out of their box and do their unique employee event here. They can, we're going to have certainly a number of birthday parties over the weekends. That'll probably, be fairly large business for us. Yeah. As well. And who even knows? We'll get some weddings and some craziness like that. And then you get into the first two levels, and that's where all the fun and wackiness starts happening with all the exhibits.
Now, you just opened yesterday. What's been the response from locals in Whiting?
The response, not just from locals, but from all the people that have been coming in. We had a line about 35, 40 deep right at the opening of the doors yesterday morning. And we had a similar line this morning. We're encountering people that walk in the doors, and right when you enter, your jaw hits the floor because you're faced with a gigantic lobby with our take on a Hall of Fame. So when you think of a Hall of Fame, Cooperstown, sure, Canton, Ohio, you're thinking bronze busts, plaques on the wall of the Hall of Famers. Well, we have a little different take on that. And when you walk in the door, you're welcomed by these ginormous mascot inflatable heads that are looking you straight in the face right in the lobby.
That is it. It sounds like it's a place where you'd walk in and a smile would come on your face immediately. That this is.
Oh man, it's not, and it's kids and adults alike. We had our sneak peek fundraising event last week Wednesday, and as we welcomed some of the mascots coming down the stairs to their theme music, I was listening to grown adults behind me get the giggles. it's hard to not put a smile on people's face when you're talking about the craziness of mascots and all the great they do.
Oh no, people love the mascots. So how many mascots at this point are enshrined in the Hall of Fame?
So enshrined are 17. We've got four that have been voted in, and they're going to be inducted in our inaugural weekend induction weekend here this June. And that's going to be, you mentioned them earlier, Benny the Bull from the Chicago Bulls,
yep,
Tommy Hawk, Chicago Blackhawks, Nittany Lion from Penn State University, and Slugger from the Kansas City Royals baseball team. And that's going to be our signature event, every June. And so mark your calendars, June 14, 15, 16. Make plans to be in the city of Whiting, Friday night, all day Saturday, and in the Sunday morning. And we hope to have a weekend-long festival.
This is going to be great. Now, you, as we mentioned, you opened yesterday, and people can always go to the website, which is, of course, mascothalloffame.com.
But that's right.
You're open now. The official grand opening, the big grand opening weekend, is April 5th, 6th, and 7th, right?
That's correct. And so we've got a lot of electronics, a lot of technology built into the exhibits and the facility itself. So this soft opening period, we're getting all the kinks out and all the bugs out. And, any facility is going to go through that. And we're really excited that we've gotten great feedback on the exhibits that are in, great feedback on the interactions, great feedback from teachers who were here last weekend checking out the curriculum and checking out the education that's inherent in the exhibits, and it's been thumbs up so far.
So what kind of educational experiences, if teachers are listening now and they're plotting out their field trips for the spring? This sounds like it'd be a fun place to take a field trip. What are the curriculum that they could look forward to?
Well, so we partnered with Tryon University and Calumet College of St. Joseph, and they put together a curriculum that isn't just embedded in the exhibits, but it's a curriculum that they can have in their classroom before their visit, before these kids come on their field trip to the Mascot Hall of Fame, during their visit, obviously, and then some curricular activities when they go back in the classroom after their visit. So it's a full encompassing experience, educational experience, and they're going to have so much fun with these mascot, you know, themed exhibits that they're not going to realize they're learning, you know, science and math and literacy and art and engineering and heart rate and geography and all these great things. They're not even going to realize they're learning it.
Anytime you can sneak a little learning in without the kids knowing it, I think that's always beneficial. So
right. Let's keep that secret here.
So we're starting with the big sports mascots. That seems you mentioned the induction class for June. You've got the big sports mascots in there now. As you look down the road in the Mascot Hall of Fame, any thoughts of opening it up to, you know, maybe a corporate mascot or a brand mascot or minor leagues, college, maybe some local high schools? Is that all down the road?
Well, you know, that's interesting you say that. So we're going to have, once we start building our programming, we're going to have lecture series and programming and member events. And we're certainly going to have high school mascot boot camps and even college mascot boot camps. You know, mascots, the work of a mascot isn't just fun and games. It might look like it, but there's a science to it. There's a safety component to it. You can't just put on the suit and think you can do it.
Right.
You've got to really think about how to do it and how to do it safely.
What are the hours? If people are, like, now we've got, you know, people, kids are off school, people are looking for something to do with their kids. Sounds like the perfect time, as you mentioned. Come in now, see it during this soft opening, and then once the summer hits and things are going full guns, you go back again.
That's right. So we're fully operational. We're open pretty much every day, 10 to 6. On Thursdays, we're open late till 8 p.m. for those late stragglers getting out of work who want to, you know, do something Thursday night. And then Sundays, we'll close early at 5 p.m. But pretty much, you know, we're going to be here. We're going to be open doors every day. We're not going to be open New Year's Day,
okay.
So make note of that. But every other day, we'll be here ready to welcome everybody to into the Mascot Hall of Fame.
And you got a snack shop. You got a gift shop. Tell me about, before I let you go, Rez, how about the Build a Mascot area?
So the Build a Mascot, so there's two components to it. There's an electronic component, kind of touch screen, video screen. And before we opened, the designers were cooking it all up. And they told us there's 500 billion combinations, possible mascot combinations. And I said, my brain can't compute that. Prove it to me. And they said, all right, well, you got 45 options of this, you know, different arm sizes and shapes, different feet sizes, you know, foot sizes and shapes, hats, outfits, you know, bellies, this and that. And I tell you what, my calculator hit about 498 billion options. And so I can't fault their math. And then there's an actual, you know, what we want to call, gigantic Mr. Potato Head of mascots. So you've got some gigantic, you know, mascot parts, arms, legs, bellies, feet, outfits, hats that the little kids can put together and create the mascot of their dreams.
What's neat
about the electronic one is you don't just create it and leave and it disappears. You can email it to yourself or you can email it to your grandparents across the country and get them involved in the experience too.
It sounds like a ton of fun. Orestes Hernandez is the executive director of the Mascot Hall of Fame, which is now open at 1851 Front Street in Whiting, Indiana. $12 for children and adults. Children under 2 are free. If you come in under 12, you got to be accompanied by a person 16 or older, which makes a lot of sense. You don't want kids just running wild in there.
That's right.
You can either call 219-354-8814 or go to mascothalloffame.com. Orestes, I look forward to seeing you out there. It sounds like a blast. Thanks for taking some time today.
Hey, thanks so much to you guys for the opportunity to share with your listeners. We appreciate it.
And try to survive the cold. It's no Miami, but I think you'll like it here.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it. Thanks, Brian.
Take care, Orestes. That is Orestes Hernandez, again, the executive director of the Mascot Hall of Fame. So, look, you, Ben looked very interested. This seems like something. It seems like something I'd like to do. I'll head down there. Head to Whiting.
Look out! Look out! Pink elephants on parade, here they come, liberty, poverty, they're here.
That's my new song.
It is. Everywhere. Except if you have to see pink elephants, you're hallucinating. Steve Dale, actually in Thailand, hobnobbing with pachyderms, one and all. I welcome Steve Dale to the program. It's always, I always love to talk to you because you're a fascinating guy. And it's nice because I can ask you a question and go and have a sandwich and come back. It's no, and I love that in a guest, and you know that too. You like a guest who actually is going to answer a question.
Yes.
Instead of, hey, what do you think about Thailand? Cool. Really?
But that when your guest is also a radio host,
exactly.
That's the problem.
No,
because
it's not
I could
a problem.
Talk through the commercial break and the newscast and the next
Listen,
newscast.
They're used to, I'm here. They're used to that. So I spoke to you. Welcome, first of all. Thank you for
Thank
coming
you.
In.
Thank you.
So I talked to you before you went on this Thailand
yes.
adventure. And we will talk about pets, and if you have a question, 312-981-7200, because we'll talk about pets and anxiety and stuff. But I really want to talk to you about this, because I was following on Facebook your adventures, and you had said something before you went. And you said, I want to go see elephants,
yes.
but I have to be very careful about where I'm going. Explain that to people. What does that mean, you have to be careful about where? Not that the elephants are going to stampede you to death, but something else.
Right. So in Thailand and in other Southeast Asian countries, there are two types of elephants. There are the Asian elephants that are wild elephants. We mm-hmm. went to a national park hoping to see some. In Thailand, if I recall correctly, there are 2,000 of these elephants, and that's it, that are wild elephants.
Wow.
But because elephants have been used for a purpose for thousands of years in that part of the world, working elephants, working farms, working ranches, working and bringing timber to market, and doing all sorts of other things that, well, elephants do very productively. And it's been year after year after year, again, thousands of years, they call these elephants domestic elephants.
Wow.
Now, their temperament may be different. That's what they maintain, and I trust that's the case. Are they domestic like our dogs? I don't see.
Did any roll over and let you rub their belly?
No. And people generally don't have elephants in their living room. However, they are different, and the problem now, though, is the working elephants aren't needed to work anymore.
Okay.
The unemployment rate is quite high.
That's not good for elephants.
No. So what
to be on the dole.
Mm-hmm. So what do you do with these elephants? So in Thailand, what they've done is they've created, and also for elephants that have been abused. So the good news is Thailand, to some extent and a great extent, is understanding the way elephants historically were trained wasn't always the most humane way to train them.
Okay.
And some elephants that have been abused, they don't like people anymore.
Sure.
And unlike dogs, which oftentimes are amazing at what's the right word that I'm looking for?
They come through trauma and they're very forgiving.
That's the word. Thank you. And they are. Elephants are not always so forgiving. And
they
don't want to be. You don't want an elephant holding a grudge. And elephants, as they say, and it's correct, they remember.
They never forget.
Uh-huh. So some of these elephants that have been abused, in fact, most of them, don't like people.
Yeah.
Which I'll circle back to.
Okay.
So some of these elephant sanctuaries, they have elephants still that perform for the tourist. They do tricks. They sometimes paint. They offer elephant rides. And my problem with that is I'm concerned about the way, potentially, these elephants have been trained.
Right.
But moreover, I like the other option, which are elephants that roam freely,
yeah.
and can do what they want to do. If they want to interact with the tourists, great. If not, well, then that's their option. They don't have to do that. And that's my preference. And I wanted to be very careful to choose a sanctuary that truly is a sanctuary and one that allowed these sorts of freedoms for elephants so I don't have to worry about these potential inhumane
sure.
issues. So we found one. It's called Kanta Elephant Sanctuary, although there are many that are appropriate. Kanta is not the only one of its kind. And we all, when we got to Kanta Elephant Sanctuary, had to wear elephant suits. They look like pajamas.
Okay.
And without the little feet, they look like pajamas. And the reason for it, and they had little elephants on them. They were very cute. But the reason for it is fascinating, I thought. And that is, these people that wear this always come with food.
Okay.
The first thing you do is you feed the elephants. And the elephants learn very quickly, the people that are dressed this way, that look like this,
we like them.
Uh-huh. I thought that was fascinating.
That is. It shows how intelligent animals are. Right? A lot of times we go, oh, that dog is smart or that dog's dopey or whatever. But they do. I mean, there's a There's a reason they can exist in the wild like that. There's a reason they can adapt and do those kind of things. But it is, I wonder how long it takes. Did you find out how long it takes for them to become acclimated to someone dressed in those clothes?
Well, the other thing they have going for them is elephants, like dogs, live based on what others, in the case of a dog, it would be, the dogs are very social, mm-hmm. and you're a member of your dog's pack, or vice versa. For elephants, they are just as social. So if an elephant is introduced and they see another elephant respond in a certain way, they are more likely to respond that way very quickly.
Huh. All right. So they're watching, and a new elephant might go, oh, look at it. They keep walking up to those people, and they're getting treats. I'm going to I better amble up there.
Yeah, and they're careful with the new elephants, but at least this individual place called Kanta has never had a problem. And
where are these elephants coming from? Where do they come from to the sanctuary?
They're coming from jobs that no longer exist. They were laid off. So a timber company that they once hauled for isn't cutting trees anymore, which may be a good thing. They're not, or sometimes for individual families, and they just don't want elephants any longer. So where do they go? You know, there are no elephant shelters, you know.
No, like, we can't have dog adopt shelters. Out.
Yeah, and the other thing is, then what do you do? So long term, they don't know the answer to that in Thailand. Yeah. So here's what I'm talking about. A dog, sadly, or a cat lands at an animal shelter. They're spayed or neutered, and they are hopefully adopted out, but they're not reproducing. They don't spay or neuter the elephants.
Right.
So they continue to reproduce and do what elephants do.
Yeah.
So long term, they're going to continue to have these elephants. So long term, they continue to need tourist dollars to support having the space for these elephants.
And so are there still areas in Thailand where there are wild elephants?
Yes.
And are they... Once these elephants are born in these sanctuaries, are they able to go into the wild, or are they too used to seeing people in onesies come up and give them treats?
Well, that's a great... You asked the best question. So that is a great question. I think that with careful planning, introductions could be possible. However, it has to be careful planning because they are such... social animals. I remember when I worked with orangutans, which is a whole other story.
Wow.
But when I worked with orangutans that were confiscated, you would take these baby orangutans, but you could not say, go to the forest and thrive.
Right.
Because they didn't know how.
Yeah.
And with elephants, they are such intelligent and social beings. Without being taught by mom, they wouldn't know how. And mom doesn't know because she wasn't taught by her mom. That's one issue. And the other is that I don't know that it's completely true, but in Thailand they maintain that these elephants are different, that they wouldn't be able to survive very well in the wild.
The domestic elephants.
Yeah. Now, again, I don't know that I completely buy that, but that is what they say.
Is there a big problem with poaching over there?
Yes.
I know that's a problem in Africa and Tanzania.
Yes. Wild elephants.
Yes.
You know, not so much at these parks, but at wild elephants. So at these parks, they have mahouts with them, they're called, and they're elephant trainers that essentially live with these elephants just about 24/7. One advantage of that, among others, is that it's protection for the elephants. But wild elephants have no such protection.
Correct.
So in the national park, they do have game rangers, like in Africa, that do the best they can.
Yeah.
But they're outgunned and outnumbered. And it's really very sad how elephants are, in fact, disappearing from the planet under our own eyes. And you wouldn't think elephants, they're too big. How can they disappear? But they are. They're being hunted away.
It's amazing. So when you go to the sanctuary, and then we'll move on to actual domestic animals here in the U.S., but I find this fascinating because, you know, when you're a kid and you go to the zoo and you see the elephants, it's fascinating. And then, unfortunately, as a little kid, when you don't know better, I remember seeing them at the circus and they do these tricks, and it's, you know, these giant animals doing these things. And then you realize, like you said, you know, the questionable training methods and stuff. But when you go to these sanctuaries, besides walking up and feeding the elephants, what kind of contact do you get to have with them? Obviously they're not doing, juggling for your amusement.
No, it's amazing. So at one point they walked into the water and they said, here, and they gave us a brush, a big brush, and a water bucket. And the idea is to take the water, so now we're in the water with elephants.
Okay.
standing right beside elephants that are wow. rolling around having a great time in the water. Elephants of all ages. So there weren't any very young elephants in this group, but younger elephants okay. and middle-aged and older elephants, and they're all in the water doing, and they're going, and they're doing what elephants
right,
do.
They're being elephants.
And we're scrubbing their backs, and Whoa. And we're interacting with them, and that is like the coolest thing in the world.
And it's got to be amazing.
Yeah. And
how was the smell?
They smell like elephants, well, but you know, enough. You kind of and the water wasn't necessarily clean,
sure.
so you don't swallow any of that water. But and boy, have you ever lifted what comes out the other end of an elephant?
Why would I do that, Steve? I'm not in show
you
business.
You are in show business, so yes, that's why I asked.
I've shoveled it enough.
Exactly,
here, yes.
exactly. But it's heavy, surprisingly heavy. Maybe not surprisingly.
I was going to say I'm not surprised by the heft and weight of it. Not at all.
And when going somewhere with like Thailand, it's great to do what we did, and that's to have help organize it. We did that with Audley Travel.
Yeah.
And again, people will ask, it's called Kanta Elephant Sanctuary. Only giving them a plug because they do things, by all accounts, the right way, which I like to see.
Very nice. Steve Dale is here. If you have a question for Steve, of course, 312-981-7200. We're going to do this, and then when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about your pet and anxiety that may or may not come with New Year's Eve, and some New Year's resolutions to make you a better pet parent or pet companion. All right. Steve Dale is here for a few more minutes. It is always fascinating to talk to Steve. Give us that the reserve again.
It's called Kanta, K-A-N-T-A. And I'll be writing about it, I hope, within the next couple of days, posting some videos and things like that.
At Steve Dale's Pet World?
SteveDale.tv.
SteveDale.tv, yeah, there yeah. you go. And so we don't forget, so everybody knows, give us the show time again, because it's tragically short. Are you still on the radio here?
Well,
listen, no, because I don't
am
know.
I
don't know if I am either. That's no. why from day to day I have to ask everybody.
No, you're right. I am tragically short. I'm trying to change that.
The show, not your stature.
Oh,
that's nothing you can do
me.
About that.
6:30 Sunday mornings. Right. And in fact,
yes?
we have a very special
Ooh.
Announcement to make this Sunday morning, having to do with one of the animal welfare agencies
really?
In Chicago. Uh-huh.
Oh,
and
man.
I think that we're going to have Doc Emmerich on also making, he will be a part of that announcement.
Wow.
Doc Emmerich, the hockey broadcaster.
The hockey analyst.
So, how does that all tie in?
You've talked to Doc
yes,
many times because
yes, yes.
he is a huge proponent of that.
He is.
Of
he
animal
is.
Welfare.
So New Year's Eve is right around the corner. It's like almost here.
Yes, and people will be blowing things up and popping corks. And again, not maybe as on a grand of scale as 4th of July. But enough where
yeah.
dogs and cats, but a lot of dogs, they don't like it.
So if they find a hiding place and they're content with that hiding place, leave them be. If you know they're going to be really upset about all mm-hmm. of it, a sanctuary room is something I'm all for. So pump up WGN radio in the
right
background
on.
So they don't hear it as much. Close the shades so they don't see it as much. And distraction is the greatest thing in the world.
Yeah.
So if you can find a food puzzle that the dog can move around, or cat can move around and get some food out of or treats from,
okay.
if they're thinking about that, they're not thinking about whatever it is that makes them nervous in general. And maybe you have a lot of people over, so maybe it's not the noise. Maybe there isn't that
yeah,
much noise.
Yeah, they just don't like people.
Maybe it's...
they're antisocial.
No, maybe it's yeah. that many. Well, hey, if they're my relatives, I can understand
yeah,
it.
Mine too.
Yeah, so I totally agree with them. I wish I could find that sanctuary room.
Yeah, if somebody
room.
Could give me a sanctuary
exactly.
room, I'd be the happiest guy on the planet.
Exactly.
I'm distracted. I'm listening to Steve and Johnny's New Year's Eve broadcast. I'm doing a food puzzle.
I'm happy. Yeah, exactly. Exactly right. Also, there are nutritional supplements that can help. One is called Zentral, and that can lower anxiety. If you have a dog, you want to plug in a pheromone diffuser called Adaptil.
Okay.
For cats, it's Feel-Away. And Feel-Away and Adaptil are natural, and they're available everywhere. So you could just go to a pet store and pick one up before New Year's Eve.
Very nice. So everything should be nice and calm. I have to ask, do you dress your dogs?
Sometimes.
Do you know what we do
when it gets
give them festive garb?
Not so much, but when it gets cold out, it's important if you have a small dog or if you have a sighthound to put something on so the dog doesn't get cold.
Okay. Yeah, because some dogs shake like chihuahuas and stuff. They
yeah.
just shake nonstop, right?
It seems they do inexplicably at times, but
so
sometimes
it's not that they're
because,
cold.
Sometimes it right. is because they're cold and they get cold. The small dogs aren't able to control their own body temperatures very well. And Lou Manfredini, there was a promo for him. He was talking about.
I've heard of him. He's very good.
You know, I like him.
He does
and,
all right.
Uh huh. And he was talking about salt that's safe, I believe, for concrete. So
he was worried about salt killing your lawn. I always have to go and look for the stuff that will not burn the dog's paws.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you know what's horrible about
sure
that?
Paws is a good product.
I use that.
Yeah.
The problem is they charge so much more for that stuff.
They shouldn't.
I know they shouldn't, but they do everywhere. And I get it because I don't want my dogs, you know, burning their feet.
Yep, it's worth it.
It is worth it to do it. But I think it's one of those things where, you know, a specialty product, they're going to, oh, well, if you want it, you're going to pay extra for it.
But I bet if enough people buy it over time, because it was the same with the antifreezes that were PetSafe antifreezes. And I don't know that they're any more expensive today, but when they first came out, they were. And all they did was add a bittering agent to make it taste really bad so the pets wouldn't lap it up. And antifreeze is a problem. So just a teaspoon worth of antifreeze will kill a cat or a small dog and maybe even a large dog. It won't take much more than that. So I am all for the PetSafe antifreeze.
Sure.
When I first started talking about it, I heard the same thing correctly. It was a lot more money, and that's not right.
No.
But they came down in prices. More people began to do it, and also more companies began to do it.
And it's also not real easy to find that the PetSafe stuff, the Sure stuff.
Really?
And, yeah, I mean, I've gotten it at different places, either at one of the big pet stores. I found it at Sam's one time, like a double bottle.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's
maybe Lou Manfredini has some in his house.
Listen, I don't know. Lou's worried about your lawn.
I don't care about that.
Yeah, he's worried about your patio getting pitted.
Oh, who cares?
All right, I'm getting the high sign. Thank you, as always, for coming in. Happy New Year.
Thank you.
Read Steve Dahl at stevedahl.tv, all the interesting articles that Steve puts up. Listen to him on Sunday mornings. Big announcement this Sunday. Don't miss it. Big announcement. I'm a little jealous because usually you come on here with big announcements, but do it on your own show. We'll get people listening at 6:30 Sunday morning, more so than they already do. Maybe they'll give you an extra 10 minutes.
I don't think so.
Move the show up and expand it.
I think
you need more time.
Thank you.
All right. You're very welcome. Brian Noonan in for Rowan Anna. Blackhawks hockey coming up at 7 o'clock. Chris Bowden with the pregame. Minnesota Wild coming into the United Center. Minnesota 17-15-3, the Blackhawks 13-20-6. Last night, Timberwolves come in, now the Wild comes in. Everybody from Minnesota coming down. We, Ben played that bump because a lot of people are contemplating a big decision come January 1st, going into dry January. I don't know if you've heard of this. It started a few years ago. It started in the UK, giving up alcohol for an entire month. Now I've been toying with this idea. I would not say that I'm a huge drinker. I do enjoy beer on more than one occasion. So I'm thinking, not that I'm drinking too much beer, but it goes along with weight gain and all different kinds of stuff. So I've been kind of going back and forth with this, and I'm wondering at 312-981-7200 if you've tried this in the past and what benefits you found from it, because I have benefits here according to some research, but sometimes that research is a little skewed or they don't ask a lot of people, so I'm counting on you to kind of help me out a little bit. Do you think you could do it, Kim? Could you give up alcohol for a month?
I was actually just reading an article in the Trib that somebody reprinted, a comedian wrote an article about he gave up alcohol for 2 years.
He listed
all the things that, you know, it did for him. Losing weight, he bought a condo, he got a job. I mean, it was like a whole bunch of great things.
It is a lot of great things. And then you think, boy, how much were you drinking?
Yeah.
If all those things.
I think he was drinking a lot.
And God bless him if you can stop for that long. Because they say even with dry January, about 8% of the people who make it a month decide they're not going to drink anymore. Whether it was, you know, something that they thought was an issue or not, they're just like, well, I feel better. My skin is better. I've lost some weight. Whatever it is, 8% of the people who try this keep going. I don't think that would be my case if I was able to make it a month.
To see how you do.
Yeah, just to see if I could do it. I don't think I would stop drinking completely because I enjoy having a beer,
yeah,
or I enjoy having a cocktail.
A glass of wine here and there, but yeah. I'm not a big drinker. But I do enjoy it on a Friday or Saturday night.
Yes, exactly. There's nothing wrong with being social. I hesitate to ask Carm because I know
with his
big toe issue, I don't know if that's brought on by too much rye whiskey.
Well, you know, gout. If he has gout, you don't drink red wine. That right. I can tell you.
You hearing that, Carm?
I'm hearing all of it. It's an interesting one because I think, Brian, here's my sales pitch for you.
Yes.
If you went through the month and you didn't drink, would you feel proud of yourself? Would you feel like you accomplished something?
I would feel that I've accomplished something just because I set a goal for myself that I achieved, but it would be the same as if I had set a goal that I'm, you know, every morning I'm going to get up and do 2 push-ups.
Is that the same, though, like not drinking for a month? Is that the same as, like, I'm going to give up gluten? You know, I mean,
I think it's in the ballpark.
I don't know. They say the reason for this is they say that, you know, people are indulging during the holidays and it's kind of just a chance to recalibrate yourself. And it's a different situation if you have a problem. That's not what we're talking about. This is if, you know, I drink, I want to see. But yes, I would be proud of myself if I could do it because I enjoy having a beer. I have beer guys on the show, you know? So that's been my stumbling point. I'm like, well, I've got this segment that we do at the breweries where these guys come in and we talk about beer and we sample beer and, oh.
Well, you could sample non-alcoholic.
Oh, how much fun is that? But see, that to me, that defeats it. That's cheating. If I'm not drinking for a month.
Then you're not drinking.
Then I'm not drinking non-alcoholic
either.
Well,
so you know what? It's a month. The guys would understand if you post.
Oh, sure. No, they would be fine with it.
You bring a taster in.
It's rough for a tasting segment, but there you go. Bring a taster in.
Bring a taster in. You want to come in, Carm?
See, I just, how deep we want to go here, Brian, as far as the whole alcohol
I'm,
thing.
I'm asking.
Well, because I think most people, myself, when I have, when I'm going for a glass of wine or a Little Maker's Mark Neat or having a beer, I'm probably, you know, trying to mellow myself out and not have some conversation that I want to have, you know, something along those lines, right?
Sure, okay.
So now, if you take that off the table, maybe you're having greater connection with the people in your lives, right?
Yeah.
Possible.
So you don't drink for the enjoyment of having a drink, you drink for, there's alternate reasons. Is that what I got from what you said? And if I'm wrong, correct me.
I mean, like,
see, to me, sitting down, I'll let you think how you, if or how you want to answer that, and you don't have to. But for me, to sit down and have a beer is a very social thing. You know, I like to sit with my friends or sit with even my wife and I if we're having a glass of wine
alone
at dinner. No, I don't drink alone.
No.
Did I tell anybody?
I only drink if I'm out with people.
But why couldn't you just socialize with your friends without having a cocktail?
I could, but that's what I'm saying. I don't. The drink part is not to avoid something. The drink is a benefit. It's an addition. It's a nice little accoutrement to our conversation, or it complements a meal or something like that.
It makes it feel like a special night. You know, it doesn't. Uh-huh. It's just not another ordinary dinner.
Right.
You don't think it's taken a little, perhaps, of the anxiety off of being with people and not being in your corner and just doing that type of thing? No.
I'm sure for some people it does. I'm not judging. Your point is valid. It's for some people that's why they enjoy it. So are you then in that? If that's the situation, then not drinking for a month would create a whole bunch of other issues socially and interpersonally that, you know. Might as well just have the drink.
Then you need to find new friends if it creates an issue.
That's true.
Right. Yeah, or going to some sort of therapy.
Yeah, I mean, the guy in this article said he lost friends because they couldn't understand why he wouldn't drink.
Yeah. People get that way. And even if it's for a month, like, this is an experiment. We've got to take because we're going up to pregame, so I got to take a hard break now. But we'll continue this conversation. If you want to jump in, we're getting some text, 312-981-7200. Feel free to join the conversation after this. WGN. Hopefully during this conversation, people are grabbing a drink and thinking about what they're doing. We're talking about Dry January, which is an experiment that started in England and has kind of come over to this side. People have tried it over the last couple years, and I've been wondering about it myself. Is this something I should do, and is it something you have done? We'd love to hear from you. 312-981-7200. We were talking a little bit before with Carm and Kim about friends and people who don't support these kind of things. And again, now we're not talking about someone with alcoholism. That's a different topic altogether. This is something that voluntarily you go, all right, I want to see if I can do it for whatever reason. Is it dietary? Is it budget? Is it, you know, they say your skin is better. You sleep better. All these different things to give yourself kind of a month long detox. And they also say if it's something that you try and you find that you can't do it for more than a day or two, maybe then you need to evaluate something. And, you know, and that's fair too. Somebody from the 217, if your friends can't handle you not having a drink, they're not really your friends. I know I've been clean for 27 and a half years. Congratulations. One day at a time. Keep that up. I give it up for Lent from the 630, and I usually drink most, if not every day. That's from Greg. I gave it up January 2010 and haven't drank since. My health is better. I lost 10 pounds, saved tons of money, total dinner bill amount drops, able to drive without worrying about how much I've had to drink, etc. That from George. And from the 773 from Tim, it's hard not to drink for a month because alcohol is often gifted during the holidays. I have some fine brews and whiskey waiting to be consumed at my apartment. For example, Chimay Blue or Carlemay Triple. Yes, see, that's the other thing. This is, oh man, there's so much good stuff.
It doesn't go bad.
No, it doesn't. You just leave it in there till February. But yeah, so I
let it chill. It'll be really cold when you open it up.
It's going to be delicious. Let some of those beers can age a little bit and they'll be fine. I know if I wasn't doing the shows, it would be no problem. But I look at it, I'm like, oh, well, tomorrow the Carnarvon wagon is coming. And if I were filling in for Roe sometime on a Friday in January, the Carnarvon wagon comes. That would be rude not to have a drink. You know, or I'm doing a beer segment. Well, it'd be, how could I have a beer segment and not, you know, not taste the beer? At home, I probably could do it because I've done it for a few weeks at a time just as a test, just to go, all right, I'm trying to lose, you know, I'm trying to lose a couple pounds. And while the beer is probably not the problem, the beer contributes to the other parts of it. So that's the other reason I was looking at doing it for January, just as kind of a jump start to a little weight loss.
Yeah, but the beer thing, the Carnarvon wagon, those all sound like excuses.
Those are excuses.
You can easily say to people, hey, I'm doing a dry January. I'll get you next.
No,
I'll get
and
you
that's,
in February.
That is exactly what they are, Kib. I was trying to make excuses instead of saying, I'm going to do this. Because as Carm asked at the beginning, he's like, would you be proud if you did it? Well, sure. Anytime. I think anytime you set a goal for yourself, whether it's not drinking, whether it's, you know, giving up whatever, whether it's whatever the goal is, you should feel proud of yourself, or why bother?
Look at Kim holding standards. Love that move right there.
Yeah, she dropped it. She didn't let me get away with it. She didn't let me soft sell the my bad excuses. My entire reason for not doing it. Oh, yeah, I want to have a drink.
If it helps to have a partner, I'll do it with you.
Wow.
Look at
that.
Wow. Wow. All right. Somebody asked, if you don't have alcoholism, why would it be a problem to go 1 month without drinking? It shouldn't be.
Well, the whole point is that I'm not an alcoholic, so I don't need to do this. I like to have my one or two drinks. That's the general reasoning,
yes,
right?
Exactly. There's no... Listen, if you want to have a drink, call me. I'll come have it with you. But yeah, it's just his little test. And it's, you know, it's something, again, that people are trying to do. And it started in England because they, you know, they drink like crazy people over there.
They
do. So that's why it started over there, to try to clean people up for a little bit. So it does affect your body by not. So normal drinkers underwent baseline testing with blood samples, liver ultrasounds, and all of that. They had lower levels of liver fat, the people who quit for a month, improved blood sugars, lower cholesterol than they did at the beginning of the month. They reported improved sleep and concentration. And in contrast, people who kept drinking saw no benefit. So
more money in your wallet.
That's it. You know what? When the texter mentioned the dinner bills, back when I lost all my weight at first and I wasn't drinking at all when we would go out to dinner, it's so much cheaper to go out to eat if you're not drinking.
It's a huge factor.
Sometimes I look at the bill and I go, we each maybe have two drinks, and the drinks are more than the food. I'm like,
yeah,
this is ridiculous. I'm not, no. That, for nothing else, that's a reason to go out a dry January. To just say, I got to save some money.
It almost feels, if you don't drink and you're used to drinking, going out to dinner, it almost feels like it's free. I can't believe it.
Oh, I know. Because you're like, wait a minute, that's 40, 50 bucks.
That, yeah,
I'm not...
And then when you know, you have kids that drink and you go out to dinner with them and they're like, oh, we can really get the good stuff now. I'm out with my parents.
Oh, sure, mom and dad are paying.
Yeah.
That's the nice thing. Molly, I know Molly does drink, but she, for some reason, she never drinks when she goes out to dinner with us. I'll be like,
really?
You want to get something? No. But then she'll tell me, oh, man, I like a Jameson and Ginger, this or that. And I'm like, where are you drinking these things? Because I'd never see you have a drink. But maybe she's lying. Maybe she doesn't like them. She just wants to sound cool. Because, you know, I put that kind of peer pressure on at home.
Kim just made me terrified of being a parent. Oh, my God, they're going to come to dinner. Now they're going to want to get the night.
Oh, sure.
The Macallan 18, you know.
Oh, yeah, you got two figures of Macallan. Listen, Mom and Dad have unlimited resources. Carm, before you start worried about your kids coming to dinner.
Right,
you know,
right.
You've got a lot of, yeah, you got some other steps you got to take into account.
That's probably why I've got this casual drinking thing I like to do, because I'm getting ahead of myself here, Brian. Let's just calm down.
We all got to calm down. We gotta just back it up. We just gotta slow your roll, Carm.
Yeah, no, I got it. Thank you.
No,
Carm's got no ring January going.
Yeah, no ring January. That's, I like that. How's that gonna work out? Do you think you'd get a partner in that, Carm? Like Kim offered to be my dry January partner. Do you think your lady friend will go with a no ring January?
I don't think she'd love that one.
No?
That would not. I don't think she'd be leaping up just like Kim offered so beautifully to be
that
your
was
partner.
Very nice.
I'll do it with you too, buddy, if you want to do it.
All right, listen. We'll talk. Okay. I'll do it. I'm not, you know. No, here's the thing. I bought a six-pack of my favorite Christmas beer thinking, all right, I will drink this, and then it'll be gone on New Year's Eve, and then I'll do it. We'll see.
Okay.
We'll finalize. We're here next week.
Okay.
Leading up to, Monday's New Year's Eve, correct? Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if I come in Monday and I'm all geezed up, then you'll know that I'm prepping.
We're ready.
I'm prepping.
I have to
for
drink
January.
With Judy Pilak Saturday night. That could be the end for me anyway.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's probably going to be it. Judy having a big goodbye soiree.
Yeah, just a
very
little
nice.
One.
A little soiree. Yeah. Yeah, that could be, you ladies could put away a vineyard or two. That'll be nice. That's always fun. So, all right. This is, Carm, I got to ask you this because we were talking about, and I know you're happy to know we only have a couple minutes, so this conversation can't last long. we were talking earlier about this, the ring thing, because people have been asking, are you getting pressure from family and your lady friend? Why
sure.
is your family pressuring you? Do they expect a dowry from your fiance?
Or
you
want grandchildren.
I think, oh, my goodness.
I mean, I got a 93-year-old father. There's one. There's part two would be, I think they just really care about Chelsea and not about, you know, they want to make sure that she is, you know.
That you're not just.
Right. They're
taking her for a ride.
Right. It's not necessarily about me. They're, you know. There's a she's very popular in the family here, Brian.
Okay.
So I better be coming correct.
Yeah. So you can't. You've got an obligation now.
Right.
You brought her in. You brought her into the Carmen clan. She's been accepted.
Very much so.
Gobble 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 gobble. One of us.
Right. Right.
She's there. So yeah. Now if God forbid something happened, would they pick her over you?
Probably.
I don't blame them.
Blood's always thicker than water.
Is it? Yeah. It always is. To the point where I was engaged once before, a long time ago before I met my beautiful wife. My mom cut the old woman out of pictures.
Wow.
Yeah. My mom doesn't play. She went all gypsy on her. Yeah. She put some curses on her, cut her right out of the pictures.
They might be mad at you for a while, but they'll come back.
Yeah, but listen, we don't even want to put that out in the universe.
Right.
But this is all
going to
be wonderful. And I can't wait till it does happen. It'll be a joyous day. Listeners are saying, though, that you're already married to Harry, so you can't really, how will Harry take the news?
It's going to be, I think, a very wonderful day for Harry, actually. He's looking forward
to it.
You think
so?
Yep.
All right.
Absolutely.
That'll be nice. All right, well, we'll talk to everybody tomorrow. You'll be back, Carm? You'll be back, Kim?
Yes, sir.
Yes, we
all
will.
All right, can't wait.